Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning, and that means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because that's what we do. Start off your week, your work week, with a laugh. My dad will call in and tell a joke a little bit later on, because it's a jokey time. We've got the Monday morning movie reviews coming up with Eric and Jim. Just a couple of movies to review, plus we'll also get all the basics on what's going on with the Chicago Critics Film Festival that started this weekend. It continues all the way through Thursday at the Music Box Theater. We'll give you all the info on that as well. Everybody now knows, Game of Thrones ended last night, and we're going to talk about the best and worst TV finales of all time. We're also going to talk about phrases, the Chicago-centric old slang words that don't make Chicago look very good. We'll get into that as well, and much more. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, which is updated and interactive. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. facebook.com/Nick D Show. You can also check out our podcasts, which I think you should do. Every second of every show is podcast. You can subscribe for free. Go to iTunes, wherever you get your podcast, subscribe. They will automatically show up in your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there you go. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and stay on our Facebook page as well. All right. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom. Tom Hush, how are you?
I'm doing good, Nick. How are you?
You have a good weekend?
Yeah, I had a really great weekend.
Yeah, I know you went to go see Alien. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, we will. It was definitely an experience.
And also, now, you're a Game of Thrones fan. Were you happy with the ending?
You know, I think it's too early to tell. I had some initial thoughts, but I got to say, it's one of the things I've been thinking about is that we probably won't have another show quite like this, where everybody sits down and watches it. I mean, there's great TV on,
yeah,
as you and I both well know, but I don't know if we'll have something that captures the monoculture like this really ever again.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised at how big a deal it was. And I know people liked the show. I was not one of them. but I guess I didn't realize what a cultural phenomenon it was until this season.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it was popular. I just didn't know how popular, but yeah. So we heard Ryan Burrow do a report from a watching party.
I never subjected myself to that. I was like, I don't know if I can be around all these people watching it, because I like the show a lot.
Yeah.
But I would not consider myself a super fan. Like
we had my ex-wife and I had a house full of people for the finale. And it did not disappoint. We're going to be talking about best and worst TV finales. I thought The Wire was great. I thought the way they ended it was great. It was really satisfying and really heartbreaking, too, to see where some of these characters, you know, where they ended up. Michael B. Jordan, by the way, kills me in the final episode of The Wire.
Yeah. What a young talent at the time.
Oh,
you know, it's so weird to see him. I started rewatching some old episodes of The Wire just to...
He was amazing on that show.
I know.
Kid. Unbelievable.
And what a writer in David Simon.
I had David Simon on my show. I actually had him on three times. One of the most brilliant men that I've ever interviewed. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you just put him in charge of TV and everything's fine. You know, just let him create shows. That's, you know.
You're a fan of The Deuce?
Yeah, I love The Deuce. I absolutely,
Tremé?
I love The Deuce. I love Tremé. I love anything that's that basically has his name, that David Simon's name is on. The Corner, all that. I mean, I just think he's brilliant. He's brilliant. He's such an interesting guy and yeah. so smart.
Because he started out as a crime reporter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And now here yeah. he is, written some of the best television you've ever seen.
Ever.
You know?
Ever. Yeah. So we'll get into the TV finales. Now, and let's get into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
No shortage of good material coming from the crime reporting scene, that's for sure.
No kidding, man. I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, he started with Homicide: Life on the Street was one of the first things that he put his name on. That's one of the best cop shows of all time.
I loved Tremé. I love obviously
great.
The Wire, but I love that one as well.
Yeah, no, he did phenomenal work.
Yeah,
and how great was Andre Brower on Homicide? God, and now how hilarious is he on Brooklyn Nine-Nine? That's the thing.
And that was something that was lost to me when I first saw that show. I was like, oh, wow, Andre Brower. He's just really funny. And then my mom told me, she's like, you know, he used to be on Homicide: Life on the Street. He was like, this is why this is funny that he's cast.
Oh, absolutely. You know what show was great that he was on with Scott Bakula and Ray Romano? It was called Men of a Certain Age.
Oh, wow.
Great show. It was only on for two seasons, and I loved that show a lot. And because I was that age, like when it came on, those concerns that these guys were having, I was right in that wheelhouse, you know what I mean? And, so I love that show. That was when I really started to like Ray Romano, because I thought Everybody Loves Raymond was fine, but I really didn't start liking him until Men of a Certain Age. Now I love the guy. I think he's phenomenal. I love everything he does. But Vic, how you doing, man? Good weekend?
Yeah, very good weekend. I had just the oldest child, my son.
Yeah, and you guys know, went to go see John Wick, right?
We did.
Yeah.
in the morning, and it was packed. It was packed for a Saturday morning.
It made a lot of money over the weekend. A lot. And we're going to talk about that, too. But you had a good weekend, then.
Certainly did.
Okay, Cubs win. That's a good one. I almost blew it, but they won. So there you go. All right, here's we're going to be talking about the new movies, and we'll tell you about the Chicago Critics Film Festival. Lots of really great stuff happened over the weekend at the Music Box, and we'll get all the information from Eric. Lots of really cool things happening. And then Game of Thrones, no spoilers, obviously. We don't want to give anything away, but what did you think of that? And what do you think are some of the best and worst TV finales of all time? Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It is a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And there you go. We are also going to talk about, in honor of Game of Thrones last night, the series finale, we are going to talk about the best and worst series finales, TV series finales of all time. And we're going to be talking about some Chicago phrases that don't make our city look very good. So that's all coming up. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay, it is Monday, and that means we're going to review the new movies. Busy weekend for the Chicago film critics. The Chicago Critics Film Festival started on Friday and will continue through the week. So we're going to get an update on that. Eric Childress, Jim Leskowski joined me to talk about the new movies, and we'll talk about the Chicago Critics Film Festival. So let's get to Eric. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you again.
All right. My producer Tom came out to see Alien on Saturday night.
He certainly did.
And so, Tom, tell us a little bit about, that was your first time seeing it on the big screen, right?
Yes, that is correct. I had, first time I saw it was about 10 years old on VHS.
Yeah.
And that was in a time when DVD was prevalent, and I still watch it on VHS.
Yeah.
So it was really a biblical experience. It was really a special experience because it is a film franchise that I love so dearly. That includes the Alien versus Predator movies. I bat for those,
oh,
even though they are objectively terrible.
What?
Yeah, he likes the Alien versus Predator movies.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
No, yeah. But that was your first time seeing it on the big screen, so that must have been really cool. Because I've seen it. I'm old.
Are you?
Yeah. I'm an old man. I saw it on the big screen when it first came out in 70 millimeter, not 1970. It was 1979 when it came out. But I saw it several times in the theater, so I have had that great experience of seeing it. But it must have been really cool, especially at the music box with a full house.
Yeah, it was incredible. People were really jazzed up for it. And there were some people in the house that had never seen Alien at all.
How is that possible?
I know. It was
one of them was my mom.
Your mom had never seen Alien?
Nope.
Wow. What did she think?
She's not a scary movie person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but she was there with a friend of mine who also brought his mom, who had never seen the movie before.
Wow.
yeah, and my mom legitimately loved it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Now, listen, they did not seen the movies before, but they were aware of, and they know the chest burster scene and all that stuff. Was that something that they were conscious of?
I think in some, like, the back of their mind kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, they're aware of that, that's a scene that happens and stuff like that, so, but my mom likes to say she's, you know, forgets what she had for breakfast, so if it was there, it probably didn't strike her while she was watching the movie.
Let me tell you something, man. You know, I was 14 when that movie came out, and that chest burster scene, I'm telling you, nobody had ever seen anything like that before.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think people realize just what a game breaker that was. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just like I remember sitting in the theater, and it was seriously. I think it was like a month after I saw Phantasm. It was a good summer. It was a good summer for horror. 79 was a good summer for horror. There was a lot of really good horror movies that came out. They finally released Dawn of the Dead that summer. In 79, so it was
right.
Like Dawn of the Dead, Phantasm, Alien, they were all out there at the same time. The Frank Langella Dracula came out that summer, which is a movie that I actually really like, and I know a lot of people hate it, but I like it. So it was a good thing, but I'm telling you, that chest burster scene, everybody in the theater was like, what just happened? And I mean, the biggest reaction, of course, Veronica Cartwright's reaction is unbelievable in the thing, because they didn't tell the cast. Ridley Scott didn't tell the cast what was going to happen. Veronica Cartwright, like, really lost her stuff, and you could see it in the movie too. Like, she completely freaks out when she's freaked out the entire movie. She's the one that freaks out the most the entire movie. But that was a big deal, man. And the movie itself was just so. It was different than anything that had been out, and I thought it was just going to be like a regular sort of a sci-fi movie. And at that time, you know, we were a couple of years outside of Star Wars, and it was that. And I thought, oh, it's going to be, you know, like this little sci-fi movie, you know, with spaceships. And then I was like, what the hell? What's going on?
Yeah.
The cast is just so, everybody in that cast is so great. I mean, Harry Dean Stanton and Yaphet Kotto, for God's sake. I mean. You know, but I love everybody. Of course, obviously, the breakout star was Sigourney Weaver. Nobody knew who she was
right
at that time. And, you know, I was 14. The underwear scene. I mean, come on, man.
Wow.
You know what I'm talking about? Last 10 minutes of that movie, I'm like, whoa! So
yeah, I still remember because I saw that movie at a way too young age. I was about five, maybe 6 years old.
Good Lord!
Oh my God!
Yeah, the people across the street, my best friend at the time, they have the first ones in the block to have a VCR. You know, so they had movie night, and it was always horror movies. They always every movie night they'd invite neighbors over. It was always horror night.
Yeah,
and my dad and I watched Alien, and I still remember that. Underwear scene you're referring to, and I never forget to this day. Someone in the living room goes, "Oh, that's what the alien was waiting for."
yeah. No, it's pretty memorable. That's all I'm saying. All right, well, we're gonna get to see Sigourney Weaver. I'm gonna get to see Sigourney Weaver on the big screen again in a couple of weeks because I'm showing Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that's awesome.
At my film club. It's the 35th anniversary.
I know.
I feel like I'm 90. So we're going to show Ghostbusters on the big screen. If you guys want to get your tickets, it's amctheaters.com. It's Tuesday, June 11th, starts at 8 o'clock. And the tickets are going really, really quickly, so you might want to reserve your seats now. So go to amctheaters.com. There's a lot of hardcore Ghostbusters fans I'm discovering.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I understand that people are actually going to come in full costume.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So there's going to be some actual Ghostbusters there. So that's Sigourney Weaver. Well, I'm glad. Yeah. And Tom Skerritt, cool guy.
Oh my God! Yeah, yeah. Tom Skerritt was amazing.
Yeah.
I got to have dinner with him last night.
Yeah.
And what's awesome about Tom Skerritt is that he's actually, you know, he's not acting as much as he was, and not because of his age, is because he's actually going into forming like a little production company kind of thing for people making short films.
Oh wow.
So he actually, before we had Tom Skerritt on board to come to the festival, before he committed, Colin, Suter, who programs our shorts programs, actually programmed a short where Tom Skerritt actually narrates one of the shorts.
Hmm.
And Tom Skerritt was just doing some interviews yesterday and was going to then be there for Alien, obviously. But when he heard about the shorts, he said, I want to come see the shorts. So
oh,
he
wow.
came in the middle of the afternoon, saw the shorts, then did interviews, and he went on stage and was, like, praising all the filmmakers. There, Colin had six of the directors from the shorts there and Tom Skerritt.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah. That was unnecessary of him.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
And he was just up there basically, he was given a little wisdom about Hollywood and the new direction that film is going and things like that, and then was, really gave like praise and background notes and things like that to the filmmakers that were up on stage. So it was a pretty cool moment.
That's
awesome.
And
he wasn't there to suck the attention away from all the filmmakers. He said he'd be happy to be up on stage with them, but he didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So he just he basically praised the filmmakers.
Wow, that's great. That's
really
cool.
Really a hell of a guy, seriously.
And how did the Nightingale go last night?
Oh my gosh! The Nightingale, Aisling Franciosi, who the star of the film, was there. But at the end of the movie, she got a standing ovation.
Mm.
Yeah, the film I could tell was playing really well with the crowd. They were clearly very into it. It's a rough movie, and it's there were some people that had to leave the theater for a little while during some of the more intense stuff.
Yeah.
But they went back in.
Mm-hmm.
Like they wanted to see where the story took them, and Jennifer Kent's a hell of a filmmaker.
I had to get I had to get some sleep, Eric. So I missed out on it. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, you guys, we're gonna review the we only had a couple of movies to review. And someone's we got to take a little break because someone's having a coughing fit. But we'll take a break. Okay, you guys, hang on. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, we'll talk a little bit more about the Chicago Critics Film Fest because it's going all the way through Thursday, and we want to hear some of the other stuff that's happening during the week. And then we got a couple of new movies to review, and all that's coming up right after and we'll do the box office as well. That's all coming up after this break on 720 WGN. Everybody, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and we're here until 5. We're going to be talking about best and worst TV finales, considering there was a pretty big one last night. I mean, of course, Barry. No, I'm sorry. Game of Thrones. And we'll get to those series finales a little bit later on. Right now, though, it's time for the movie reviews. Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski join me every Monday morning to review the movies. And let's get these guys back on. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Okay, so Eric, tell everybody a little bit more about what's going on for the rest of the week for the Chicago Critics Film Festival.
Yeah, as crazy as the weekend it's been, we still have four more days of this thing that are going on, and we have major guests every single night. It's tonight, Monday night, we're showing Lulu Wang's The Farewell with Awkwafina. Lulu Wang is going to be there for Q&A afterwards, and if people are interested in going, you may want to jump on the Music Box Theater website and buy tickets, because that's looking very close to being a sellout. Mm-hmm. That thing has been selling great all week. That's Monday night. Tuesday night is the night that I'm so excited for. We're showing the movie Pink Wall, and Tatiana Maslany from Orphan Black is going to be there, and might be as geeked out as I've ever been putting on this festival.
Yeah,
not only the fact because we tried to get her 3 years ago to come in for a movie, and we were so close, we couldn't get it to work. Her and Tom Cullen actually were in this movie together 3 years ago, and now she's coming in. He's coming in because he directed the movie, and we got Jay Duplass as a bonus for all that. And so all three of them are going to be at the Music Box Tuesday night. That's also one you want to sort of jump on and get your tickets for. Wednesday is the movie that Steve Procopi really loved from Sundance this year, called Blinded by the Light, the story of this British teenager who discovers Bruce Springsteen and basically changes his life. I hear it's just a fantastic, crowd-pleasing movie, especially if you love Bruce Springsteen. So that's going to be Wednesday night, and the star of the movie and the director are going to be there for that. And then Thursday night, 6 o'clock, we're playing a movie called Loose that with Naomi Watts and Octavia Spencer that also got a lot of praise at Sundance. That's one that I'm actually going to be sitting through because I didn't get to see that one. But that people have seen it say it's Octavia Spencer's best work.
Really?
And it's a real, it's a hell of a movie. Okay. And then their closing night movie at 8:30 p.m. on Thursday is called Light from Light. A few years ago, we closed with David Lowery's A Ghost Story. This is actually another ghost story, a different kind of ghost story. Not a horror movie by any stretch. It's a movie about grief and loss, starring Maren Ireland and Jim Gaffigan, who is going to be there as part of the Q&A, along with the director and the producer. This is a really beautiful movie and one of the real movies this whole festival that sticks the landing in a way that's really going to pull on your heartstrings.
All right. Well, that's all going on right now at Music Box Theater throughout the week. Get your tickets now for these great screenings and these great guests. So it's the Chicago Critics Film Festival and continuing through the 23rd at the Music Box Theater. So there you go. All right, Eric, tell us about All Creatures Here Below.
Okay, well, speaking of the Chicago Critics Film Festival, this is actually the new film from director Colin Shifley and writer and star David Desmalchin. They had the closing night film at the festival some years ago called Animals. And this is this story. David Desmalchin play and Karen Gillan play lovers, working class lovers. He works at a pizza shop. She works for a church and sort of odd jobs around town. And their lives kind of come to a crossroads. He gets fired from his pizza job. Karen Gillan's character is kind of a childlike sensibility towards her. She might partially be mentally challenged. That's things that we'll be discovering throughout the movie. They each take a bit of a leap in where their lives are going to go. When he goes to a he goes to a cockfight, and circumstances lead him to doing something possibly really dangerous there. And she ends up fixated on the neighbor's baby that is not being taken care of, and she kidnaps the baby. And these two lovers end up going on the run, whether or not they can get away with what they're doing, whether or not they're going to survive this entire trip and this relationship that they've culled together. And that's the basic driving plot of the movie, which has a number of different twists and turns that I don't want to reveal, obviously. This is a very bleak film. Animals was a film about lovers on the run, also lovers on the run, but they were junkies, they were con artists, heroin addicts, any kind of drug for the most part, but there's kind of a spiritual redemption for the two of them as they try to actually better themselves. These characters are stuck on the run. There's not really a lot of chance for betterment, whether or not they can really even save themselves out of the situation that they're in, given that their combined intellect is just not working for them. So it leads to sort of one bad situation after another. And yet, because of the performances, you're trying to stay with them. You're trying to root for them. You don't see them as bad people, just maybe not really smart ones that made a lot of really poor decisions. They're just not horrible people. Even if they do some questionable things throughout the film, and the more that's revealed about them, it's kind of a crossroads between empathy and scorn for them. And I think the driving force of this movie are the two performances by Desmalchin and Gillen. Gillen, I think, is having a hell of a year. I think she gives one of the best performances in Endgame. I think she's one of the best things about that movie, performance-wise. And I think she's tremendous here as well. Desmalchin has been a guy that we've seen a lot, since he's kind of broken out, popping up in little small roles throughout. Obviously, he's in both of the Ant-Man movies, and he's very funny there. But this dude is a hell of an actor. And again, it's really hard creating characters like this that you really do care about, even though you know that their fates might be sealed and might actually be deserved as well. This is not a movie that is going to strike the right balance for everyone. It's a tough movie to sit through, especially the more that you find out about these characters. But at the same time, I had a real sense of empathy for them, and I was with it towards the end. There's a very sort of John Steinbeck-like quality to this film, and I like it very much.
Okay, that's All Creatures Here Below. By the way, David Desmalchin has spent a significant amount of time here in Chicago.
Yes.
Went to DePaul and has appeared frequently on Svengoolie.
Oh, yes. Huge Svengoolie fan.
Yeah, he is a massive Svengoolie fan.
Yes.
So I just love the fact that he just pops up every once in a while.
Yes.
So All Creatures Here Below. There you go. All right. Well, all right, Jim, tell us about John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum.
Oh, boy. Yeah, this is the third entry in the series from director Chad Stahelski. And like its predecessor, Chapter 3 Parabellum picks up immediately after the ending to the previous John Wick movie. John, of course, is played by the one and only Zen Master Keanu Reeves. And when we last saw him at the end of Chapter 2, John had just broken the Continental's number one rule, which is no business or any violence will be conducted on hotel grounds.
Right. All right. Yeah, okay, Jim, hang on. Hang on a second. We got to take a break.
Okay.
All right. We'll get back to the plot. We'll get back to the plot of John Wick Chapter 3 right after we take this break here, and then we'll review it. Eric didn't get a chance to see it. He was busy at the Music Box all weekend, so he didn't get a chance to see John Wick 3. But we will review it. Jim and I will review it right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're going to be talking about best and worst series, TV series finales. After, and no spoilers, obviously, for the Game of Thrones folks out there. But we're going to talk about the series finales. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Before the break, Eric Childress and Jim Laskowski are with me. We're reviewing the new movies. The big one that opened up this week, John Wick Chapter 3 Parabellum. Jim was telling us about it. Let's Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Jim, welcome back.
All right, thanks.
All right, so continue with telling us about John Wick. It picks up right where the second one ends.
Yes, and at the end of the second chapter, John killed Santino D'Antonio, and that has definitely caused some trouble, to say the least, in this, you know, grand mythology that the John Wick series has established. So at the very beginning here, he has less than an hour before a $14 million contract on his life is opened to every single assassin in both New York City and the world at large. He manages to briefly find passage out of New York with the help of a powerful figure and ally played by Angelica Houston. And meanwhile, there's also this villain character that's introduced to us, a rather stark and stoic woman known as the Adjudicator, I believe, or the I think that's how you say it. And she's played by Asia Kate Dillon, and she's been dispatched by the High Table to get to the bottom of the illegal killing that occurred at the Continental that's gotten John Wick into such hot water here. And we also have the delightful Mark Dacascos, who's an incredibly skilled martial arts expert, and he plays Zero here, and he's, you know, essentially a sushi stand proprietor who's also just one of many of the world's millions of assassins that are just kind of all tucked in different corners of the world. And Zero has been hired by the Adjudicator to give John Wick a very hard time, which he does in a very long and, you know, spectacular fight at the end of the movie, towards the end of the movie. But also on Zero's to-do list is Lawrence Fishburne's Bowery King, who presides over the city's homeless and coordinates their secret spying activities. And, of course, we know from the second film that Lawrence Fishburne's character is also, you know, he's helped out John Wick, and now he's in trouble as well. And he also might play a significant role in how things play out. Not to mention that we have returning regulars from the other two chapters that include Ian McShane and Lance Riddick, who will stop at nothing to protect their property and uphold the traditions and high expectations surrounding service at the infamous Continental. So can John Wick survive all this madness and mayhem that is about to befall? And if you've seen the others in this franchise, you know that John Wick can kind of take care of and defend himself like very few can. So, yeah, that's pretty much the gist of the plot. And the first film in this series I thought was really good and didn't necessarily reach levels of greatness for me in the way that the sequel did pretty much from beginning to end. I think sometimes these films do get a little bogged down in the mythology and the world building, but it's still cloaked in this kind of slick coolness, especially when you have such an incredible array of characters and actors here, like Ian McShane and Lance Riddick, just sort of popping up as supporting players. And Chapter 2 really felt like a step up, particularly with how beautifully orchestrated the action sequences were. And for me, Chapter 3 is pretty much right on par with its predecessor. It succeeds best for me as a spectacle. And when Keanu basically gets to do these martial arts set pieces, I'm 100% on board. I mean, there are definite moments where
it kind of turns into a little bit of a first-person shooter when the guns come blazing. And that, to me, I don't necessarily grow tired of it, but it's just not as jaw-dropping as some of the earlier action set pieces, particularly one involving knives that kind of made me giddy. And we also have other characters that show up, like Halle Berry at one point. And that whole sequence is pretty remarkable. But yeah, I mean, I think the filmmakers here really do conjure up a world in which a super secret agency can order these virtually public executions and pull them off without a trace. And it's kind of fun to watch all these chess pieces come into play and how is it all going to play out. But really, there is just no greater joy than watching Keanu Reeves just kick butt for 2 hours. And this really does deliver as successfully as the last installment did. I mean, and one thing that did surprise me, and I'm not going to give anything away, of course, is that, this becomes a bit of a setup for another chapter, which I guess I didn't expect. But at the same time, it does leave you with a lot of anticipation for what the next episode might be, due to a possible teaming up of two characters in particular that I'm not going to spoil, obviously. Part of me thought that, this is chapter 3, maybe this is just a trilogy, and everything's going to be resolved, and this John Wick arc would find closure. But it's clear the filmmakers want to continue and move forward, which doesn't bother me because I've become a fan of this series, particularly these last two chapters. I mean, what else can you say about a sequence that includes two dogs chomping on the testicles of bad guys while Halle Berry is shooting multiple bad guys at once? So that's pretty much what you're in for. It really is slam bang entertainment at its most energetic, and I'm constantly amazed by the kind of stunts and action sequences they pull off together. And I rarely mind the downtime in between everything. So as I kind of expected, I am definitely recommending John Wick Chapter 3, because it is pretty damn good.
All right. Yeah, I really liked it. I didn't like it as much as the second one. I still think the second one's the best one of the series. But there's stuff in this movie that's jaw-dropping. I also love the fact that one of the big major fights in the movie is between Keanu and the chairman from Iron Chef America. That's something
that,
right there.
That is a joy.
I was like, wait a minute, hold on. That's the guy from Iron Chef America, and he's like a total badass martial artist. I had no idea. I just thought he was Iron Chef America's chairman. So that was kind of a delight. Lots of great. Mm-hmm. I mean, the action sequences in this movie are fantastic. The fight scenes are amazing. There is a, like you mentioned, that's particularly incredible. Fight sequence in a hallway that's just filled with shelves covered in glass that just happen to have knives behind them.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you the number of shards of glass that are broken in this movie. I mean, Keanu himself goes through about 50 walls of glass, gets thrown through about 50 walls of glass in the movie. And I also love the fact that, like, to put one person down, he puts like 12 bullets into one person a piece. You know, it's like not just one, not just one shot to the head, like eight. And these movies are known for their incredible fight sequences, and this one doesn't disappoint at all. I just think it gets bogged down a little bit with because I really don't care about the plots of these movies. I just want to see Keanu, kick ass and kill people.
Sure.
That's what I want to see. But when we get into this whole, like, the Continental this and we the this and blah, 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 I was like, all right, I don't care about this stuff. Just get back to people getting their heads bashed in, because that's what I wanted to see. So the mythology gets a little bit heavy for me in this one. And I think they could have cut some of that stuff out, tightened up the movie to because it's like 2 hours and 10 minutes long. They could have tightened it up like 10, 15 minutes by cutting a little bit of the blah, blah, blah stuff out. But as far as like action sequences go, they're some of the best. I mean, dog parkour, for God's sake. Halle Berry. Halle Berry, by the way, really kicks ass in this movie, too. She's great.
Oh yeah.
And her dogs are fantastic. And that whole sequence, is amazing. Once the movie gets going, once the action sequences kick in, they're very, very hard to top. There's insane shootouts and insane fight scenes. And again, Keanu is fantastic in it, and I just love the fact that like he and Morpheus are reunited. That just makes me happy that Neo and Morpheus get to hang out together again. That just gives me joy too. It was nice to see Angelica Houston. I hadn't seen her on screen in a long time, and she's really effective in it. So I mean, this is, you know, if you're in for the ride on these John Wick movies, this pays off. I just don't think it's quite as good as the second one, but I'm highly recommending it because it's just these John Wick movies, they kick ass. There's just no question about it. And man, did it make money! Wow. So yeah. So all right. Well, what do we got next week?
We got Aladdin.
Booksmart, which I'm looking forward to. Olivia Wilde and Jason Sudeikis have been making the rounds on the talk show circuit, so I'm really looking forward to that too. All right, well, Jim, thanks, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Okay. Talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week. There you go. There's Jim and Eric. We're gonna take a break, okay, man?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll come back. We'll talk box office. Eric Childress is gonna stick around. We'll talk about the box office right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Monday morning. We're going to talk about the best and worst TV finales of all time, considering a massive TV finale happened last night with Game of Thrones. We'll jump into that. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. Right now, though, we just reviewed all the new movies. There weren't that many. There were only two to review. And we talked a little bit about the Chicago Critics Film Festival. With Eric Childress, and Eric is still here, and we're going to talk box office. Eric, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. Were you surprised by how much John Wick made? It made $57 million, and we were talking like 30-something last week, right?
Yeah, we were talking about how I thought that it was going to be close between that and Avengers. I think I gave the edge to John Wick, but I thought it was going to be, you know, like 30-something to 30-something.
Yeah.
And no, John Wick apparently is a much bigger deal than I had ever imagined.
I gotta say, these movies have built up in popularity. You know what I mean? Like the first one was just kind of this minor thing.
Yeah.
The second one was a solid hit, and I'll tell you something, man. We went Saturday afternoon, and there was not an empty seat.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those rare movies that has really built its audience after they've left theaters. I mean, John Wick Chapter 2 did fairly well, but this is, like, taking it to the next level. This has gone from, kind of a little cult, hit, video hit, and it's now turned into something just like, yeah, bring on Chapter 4. The audiences are clearly down for it.
Yeah, no, they are. And it was a very enthusiastic crowd that we saw it with, and it delivers, man. It delivers, you know, if you like the John Wick movies, it's got everything that you want from a John Wick movie. I mean, $57 million, that's really unbelievable.
It's actually the second best opening in Keanu Reeves' career.
What was this? What's the first?
The first Matrix sequel.
The first
sequel.
Matrix. Oh, yeah. The first Matrix sequel. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Matrix Reloaded.
Yeah, Reloaded.
Is the best opener. And actually, Matrix Revolutions, it opened on a Wednesday, but if you took either 3 days, Wednesday to Friday, or Friday to Saturday, John Wick beat both of them.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Wow. Okay, well, that's it. That's it right there, man. John Wick. Number two, obviously, Avengers Endgame, $29 million. It's up to $770 million in America alone.
Yeah, officially has beaten Avatar domestically for all time. It's very unlikely it's going to topple The Force Awakens domestically, but it's only $173 million away from topping Avatar worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah. $2.61 billion the movie has made.
Yeah, that's insane.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane. It's 4 weeks it's been, and it's fourth week, almost $30 million for its fourth week. I mean, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Man. All right. This Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
Yeah.
$24 million.
Yeah.
And $94 million in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's kind of coming in right where a little bit more than what I expected it to do ultimately. So, I mean, this movie is sort of looking like somewhere between 160 and 170 million, which, you know, for a Pokemon movie, is you would think is pretty good. Of course, the movie cost $150 million.
Jeez.
It's still, I mean, I don't think it's opened in all of the you know, sort of the Pokemon markets overseas.
Yeah.
It's made a little over $200 million worldwide. It's going to have to make a lot more than that to break even, though.
Yeah, okay. And then fourth place is A Dog's Journey, which was a sequel to The Dog's Dog's Purpose.
Correct.
$8 million bucks.
Yeah, I actually refuse to see these movies. I'm sorry, I don't need to see a movie where a dog dies like six times.
Yeah, yeah. I saw the first one. I didn't see this one.
Not many people did, apparently. And the first one was a surprise little hit.
Yeah.
The first one opened to $18 million and finished with $64 million. This one made $8 million and may not make $25 million.
Yeah. Wow, okay. Number five. Ooh, oh, boy, The Hustle.
Yeah,
$6 million, $23 million in 2 weeks, and it's a terrible movie.
Yeah, The Hustle. It depresses me when you you're in this portion of the list, and you see how much Long Shot has made.
Yeah,
and that the fact that The Hustle is actually going to outgross Long Shot.
Yeah,
makes me sick.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Number six, The Intruder. Look at that, Dennis Quaid all over the place.
Yeah.
28.
Also beating Long Shot.
Also beating Long Shot, The Intruder. $4 million this week, $28 million in 3 weeks. And then Long Shot, number seven,
yeah,
with only $3.4 million, $25 million in 3 weeks, which is terrible.
That's a failure. Such a failure on Lionsgate's part. You know, there's like they're so concentrated on John Wick. They thought that they could give Long Shot counter programming legs next to Avengers Endgame, but it just got swallowed.
Yeah, which is really too bad.
Yeah,
it really is too bad because Long Shot is a really, really entertaining. It's a
mm-hmm.
movie. All right, and then number nine, Palms. Nobody's going to see that. Which we talked about this last week. I'm surprised that nobody's going to see it.
I'm kind of shocked too.
I thought they were going to tap into an audience that's there. Clearly,
yeah. Apparently not.
No, or not. And then number 10 is Ugly Dolls.
Yeah, that's an STX double failure right there at nine and ten slots.
$17 million in 3 weeks.
Mm.
Yeah, and it costs what? $45 million.
It was $45 million for Ugly Dolls. Yeah,
that's insane. That's completely insane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are we looking at next week? Is Wick going to stay on top?
Not with Aladdin opening.
Oh, Aladdin. That's right. I keep forgetting.
Yeah,
about Aladdin.
But I think that, you know, Disney is, you know, probably got a lot of money built up in this Aladdin thing. I don't think it's going to do as good as they think.
Oh, I don't think so either. I mean, it looks terrible. It looks absolutely terrible. And and I think, Disney is just assuming that they can do live action versions of their animated movies now, and they'll all make a ton of money.
Right.
The thing about Aladdin, though, that people love that movie. People really, that's a beloved movie. Well, a lot of the old, you know, cartoons that they're turning into live action.
Right.
You know, Dumbo's one of my favorite movies of all time. Not the terrible Tim Burton version.
Yeah.
But the original. But I really think that they're overestimating what this thing is going to do. And I really don't think Will Smith is going to be a big draw, I gotta say.
But that's the thing, Nick, is that the reason why Aladdin is so beloved is because of one reason.
Robin Williams. Absolutely.
You know, Robin Williams, I mean, yes, okay, it's got some nice songs in it. Its characters, it's well drawn. It's a very entertaining film. But a lot of that is Robin Williams.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question about it.
That is the absolute hook of that movie when people, you know, it's the genie. It's all about the genie.
Exactly right.
And you're replacing him with Will Smith?
Yeah. Yeah. Now I realized that it was on Broadway, you know, and
mm-hmm.
You know, there were a couple of terrific actors, you know, played the genie on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
But when people go and see this movie, they're going to think of the animated movie, not the Broadway show.
Absolutely.
And they're going to compare Will Smith to Robin Williams, and it ain't going to work.
Right. And fair or not fair, that's the thing.
That,
like Will Smith had to know what he was getting into.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that seems like one of those things, just like, hey, do you want to play the genie in Aladdin? Most actors go, no.
Yeah, no, no way. I wouldn't step into that role. Are you
absolutely
kidding me?
Absolutely not.
No way. It's an iconic role, you know?
Yeah.
We'll see. But and looking a couple of weeks away, is Godzilla going to beat Rocket Man, or is Rocket Man going to beat Godzilla?
Oh, I think Godzilla will have enough in the tank to beat Rocket Man.
You think so?
Yeah, no, I think Godzilla is, yeah, I think Godzilla will yeah, handily win, because I think Rocket Man's going to do fairly well.
That
Bohemian Rhapsody crowd is going, like, what rocker can we do a biopic on next?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So I think that Rocket Man is going to do fairly well. But Godzilla, I think, will probably double its opening weekend.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. I cannot wait to see Godzilla. It looks ridiculous. I just can't wait. I'm curious about Rocket Man. You know, I realize that the credited director of Bohemian Rhapsody is not the guy who directed it,
right?
But the guy who directed Rocket Man. And I'm curious about it. And I have more faith in this one because the subject matter of the movie is alive. And will not be, you know, and is actually, he likes the movie, as opposed to, you know, what they did with Freddie Mercury's, life, which was just a travesty. But I'm curious about the movie. And, but Godzilla is the one that I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah. I think that's going to do fine.
Yeah. All right. Well, next week is the one I'm looking forward to for next week is Booksmart. No, there's no question.
Yeah, you should.
And by the way, the Red Band trailer for The Good Boys.
Oh my God, Nick.
Oh my God. I almost fell out of my chair laughing.
The one with the Seth Rogen introduction.
Oh, yeah.
The kids can't watch the trailer of the movie that they're in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that trailer is fantastic.
It's amazing. I can't wait to see that.
And the movie delivers on all of that and then some.
I mean, it seems like a really nice bookend for, you know, you got Booksmart 1 week and then you got The Good Boys a couple of weeks later. And I'm looking forward to both of them. I think they're both going to be like great R-rated comedies.
So, yes.
And I love the fact that Lisa Kudrow and Will Forte play the parents.
Yes.
Play the parents in Booksmart. I don't know why that makes me crack up. So, all right. Well, all right, Eric. Well, everybody should still get their tickets for the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is happening all the way through Thursday.
Yes.
Stay busy, man, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, man.
All right, there you go. There's Eric Childress, everybody. Check out the Chicago Critics Film Festival through the 23rd at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets now for all the really great screenings and the really great guests that are going to be a part of it. All right, we'll take a break right here on 720 WGN. More after this. Right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran will have your morning drive at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Two big, really big series finales took place this past week. Big Bang Theory, which is a show that I don't watch. And of course, last night the big Game of Thrones finale, series finale happened again. Another show that I don't watch, but Tom, you did watch the Game of Thrones finale?
Yes, I saw it.
And you're a fan of the show?
Yeah, I would say so.
What did you think of the finale? Without giving anything away,
right? You know, I think no matter how they did it, people were going to be disappointed. When you have a show that has that many characters and that many narrative threads, I really can't imagine a way that it could have wrapped up that would have pleased literally everyone. It's just the nature of the beast. I think under reflection, they did the best that they could. Back in 2013, George R. R. Martin, who wrote the books that the show is based on, since he's not done with the series, he told the showrunners the main plot points that he wanted for the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to assume that they more or less stuck to those. So if people are waiting for the books, they shouldn't be radically that different. At least in terms of the major plot points of the ending. But I think it was all right. It was all right. Maybe in a year or so, people will look back at the series and maybe find a little bit more to like, but it seems like the reaction is at best split, if not more negative than positive.
That's what that's the feeling that I got just looking at my news feed and looking online, that a lot of the feedback seems to be kind of negative about the Game of Thrones finale, which is, and again, you know, like you said, you can't please everybody. You know, everybody's going to have different expectations and you know, something, you know, that they want is not going to happen. You know, like if you're a viewer and something that you wanted to happen. And again, there's so many characters in Game of Thrones
yeah.
that, you know, you can't please everybody, I don't think.
Yeah, I think there's people who still complain about the ending of The Lord of the Rings. And that book was written in, you know, decades and decades ago. And yeah. they still have problems with it. And, you know, it doesn't make it not a masterpiece of its medium. I think Game of Thrones, what it did for television, will vastly outlive any sort of big criticisms of the way it ended. I think time will be pretty kind to it overall. But as of right now, I think people are kind of upset, but they'll get over it. It was a TV show, or I hope everybody gets over it.
Yeah.
It was a TV show. Just yeah. you got to move on.
Who complains about The Lord of the Rings?
People who really pick at the whole bird, you know, how the birds come in at the very end. Yeah. They're like, oh, you know, why didn't they just take them to Mordor? I'm like, that's not really the point. But and that's like one of the most important works of the English language. But you know, people will find a problem with anything.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're going to talk about other finales here, best and worst, most controversial finales of TV. What do you guys think? 312-981-7200. 773 area code sends a text that says the next biopic of a rock band should be the Ramones. There, you know, there's been a script in circulation about the Ramones, and they just haven't gotten it made. 412 area code says, do the actors get most of the money? Why does it cost so much? I'm talking about budgets for movies. Well, it depends. I mean, we were talking about that Ugly Dolls movie. It was a $45 million budget for the movie, but it's they had to pay a lot of actors in that one because there's a lot of people who get paid a lot of money who did voice work on that. And also animated movies take longer, you know, but it just depends. I mean, you know, like if it's a massive budget, like the Avengers was like over $300 million,
yeah,
the budget for that movie, over $300 million, and it made that back in 5 minutes, you know. So but yeah, sometimes it does, sometimes it's the production you know, that costs more, but most of the time when you have a huge budget, you know, like you got to pay these actors. That's like a, you know, like a major thing. Like, I mean, what Robert Downey Jr.'s got to, you know, he's, I don't even know what he gets for the movie. I know he gets money on the back end though. I know
he's got points. Yeah. He's got points on those pictures.
Yeah. So he's fine. Robert Downey Jr. is fine.
But then you think of something like Get Out, which used relatively, not no name, but lesser known actors, not yeah. massive people.
Yeah.
And what was their budget? Like $5 million?
It was like 15, I think, for Get Out. You know, it quadrupled that, like, you know, like 2 weeks in, because Get Out made a ton of money. But Get Out was a very, very profitable movie. And so was Us. Us was a very profitable movie, too. All right. Well, we're talking about, you know, so you're not going to please everybody with these series finales. But we want to hear from you guys about what are your favorite or most controversial. Nothing hurts a television lover worse than when a really solid show doesn't stick the landing. On the other hand, nothing draws fans out like a series finale that splits its fan base. That's where the most controversial series finales come in. The pop culture installments that are, if not more infamous than the shows that spawned them. With the Game of Thrones finale, the big finish in King's Landing and Winterfell is bound to turn some heads, but can it compete with, say, an imagined world in a snow globe? Here are the 11 of the most controversial television finales of all time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. What do you guys think? What are some TV finales that are controversial? What are the best? What are the worst? I was talking a little bit earlier with Carl and Roger when we were doing crosstalk before my show started about how much Carl and I both disliked the finale of The Sopranos. Now, but Tom, actually, you like the Sopranos finale.
Yeah, I thought it was bold. I thought it was a pretty bold thing to do, because it's like, it's another one of those things. How do you wrap up The Sopranos with that many characters and that many ways that it could have gone?
Yeah.
I thought one of the craziest things you could have done was just leave it hanging.
Yeah, I hated it.
Oh, yeah.
I hate
and
it.
I think people are justified in that.
What's really funny is that, you know, do you remember that when it aired, people thought that their cable went out?
Yeah.
They were like, what
people
the
flipped.
People, yeah, they thought their cable went out when it cut to black at the end. They were like, oh, man, the cable went out at this crucial moment. And then all of a sudden, because it took a long time for the credits to pop up, because he let that blackout go.
Yeah.
He held it before the credits came on. And people were like, what?
Yeah, now, there were probably a lot of calls to HBO support.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, there were. There were. I mean, people actually thought that their cable went out. They thought that something was wrong with HBO. But no, that was David Simon's decision.
David Chase.
Yeah, sorry, David Simon. I'm getting my
two great Davids.
My Davids, HBO Davids mixed up. But yeah, no, I was. But see, here's the thing about The Sopranos. I'm not as big a fan as everybody else is of The Sopranos. I liked the show, and I watched it, but I wasn't like insane about it. I wasn't like for me with The Wire. That was on a whole nother level. But I enjoyed The Sopranos very much overall, but I really was disappointed with that ending. But I wasn't as emotionally invested as a lot of people were, because there are a lot of people who loved The Sopranos, like really, really loved it. And I just liked it.
Yeah.
So when it was over, I was like, well, that was dumb, but I didn't care enough to be angry. So, all right, what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. That's the phone number for talk and text. Get in here now, 312-981-7200. We're talking about best and worst and most controversial TV finales. 312-981-7200. The news is up after this.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train.
That's the Sopranos. That's what they use that song at the end of The Sopranos. Which turns out to be one of the most controversial divisive TV finales of all time. And that's what we're talking about. 312-981-7200. In honor of Big Bang Theory and of Game of Thrones, which both ended. And talking about one of the best, one of the worst, one of the craziest TV finales of all time. 312-981-7200. Here is Professor Cork on WGN. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you, Nick. Great show as usual. I just got back in with a couple of my students in Kankakee. We were at Shields at the American Legion after the Sox game. I know they didn't win four. They didn't win three out of four, but they at least won two out of four. So I was, but, you know, we'll get them next time.
All right. Did you have a TV finale that you wanted to mention?
Yes. At IIT, right before he retired, we had faculty parties. You know, we had party every day. Leon Letterman, after he retired from the University of Chicago, came in, and he was a funny guy. You know, he won the Nobel Prize for the word on the that he did at the University of Chicago, and he came back to IIT, they hired him as our only Nobel Prize winner after he wrote the God Particle. And he comes in and he says, Doug, they just flew me out to California to consult on a show that's going to come up. And this is before it came up. And it's going to be related to the God Particle. And we're trying to get the right people together. And it's going to happen, you know. And so Big Bang Theory was on the screen the next year. And Leon, of course, he's been around forever. He's in his 90s now, living still near Fermi, I believe. I haven't kept track of him. Near Fermi National Lab where the buffaloes are around. But he was called out as a consultant for that job. And I think he stimulated a lot of Southside students to go to IIT for our workshops, and that was a good piece of masterstroke.
All right. Well, okay. So the Big Bang Theory, and they just did have their finale. That's another show that I tried to watch, but I couldn't get through it. I tried to watch Big Bang Theory a bunch of times, but I just didn't. I couldn't even get through it. Professor Cork, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump in. But I just the show, I found the show can be pretty much unwatchable. Let's see. Here is Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, first of all, St. Elsewhere, that just, I had a lot of time invested in that, and that just threw me completely off.
Yeah, that was that's the one that I think a lot of people pretty much agree that it was just crazy that they did it. And
it wasn't good or bad, it just, you didn't see it coming.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of people hated it. And there were a lot of people who did. But here's what they say about it here in this article. It says, the OG controversial finale after six seasons, the prolific hospital drama alluded to the idea that the entire series and all its groundbreaking storylines took place in the imagination of an autistic boy. In a final shot, he is holding a snow globe, and inside is a replica of the St. Eligius Hospital where the series took place. The small legion of superfans were vexed. Had they really been played? Was this whole very realistic medical series actually just the manifestation of an autistic boy's mind, or was there something deeper? It turns out everybody just got played. So lots of people did not like the St. Elsewhere phenomenon, the ending.
And the two-hour Cheers, that was wonderful.
Oh, yeah, Cheers was great. Cheers, the finale for Cheers was fantastic. It was really, I think, one of the best TV finales of all time was Cheers, no question about it. Steve, thanks for the call.
All right.
Were you a Cheers fan?
Yeah, I used to watch reruns a lot with my folks.
Yeah,
they love Cheers, and partially because they were watching Frasier too at the time. My folks loved Frasier.
Well, they're both great shows.
Yeah,
they're both great shows. Cheers. I really thought they did an incredible job with that finale. They sewed everything up, and it ended so beautifully with the final, you know, we're closed when it's just Sam in the,
yeah,
and in the bar. And and then what was great was that if people remember, the cast was going to be live on Leno afterwards. They were in Boston, and yeah. They had clearly been drinking during the whole while the finale was on, because they were smashed. They were drunk when they were on the air.
Well, you know, good for them.
It was really funny. Like, I mean, it was really funny. Jay Leno trying to control these guys, you know, who clearly had been drinking for the entire 2-hour finale until they went live, because they went live. They went live from Boston afterwards. You know, obviously NBC is going to do, you know, as much coverage as they possibly can, because Cheers was one of the biggest shows they ever had. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really funny. I remember watching the finale and thinking it was great, but then what a train wreck the Tonight Show was, in a good way, like a really funny way. And they didn't care. You know what I mean?
It was Cheers, a cultural icon.
Yeah.
You know?
The cast didn't care. You know what I mean? They were like, yeah, we're Cheers, man.
We're Cheers. We can do whatever we want.
Whatever we want.
Did you ever watch Becker?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. That's
Becker. Now, was Shawnee Smith on that?
I don't know. I was too young. I just knew it was Ted Danson.
Yeah, Shawnee Smith was. You know who Shawnee Smith is, right? She's the babe in the Saw movies.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I love her, and I think she was on. I'm pretty sure she was on Becker. I'm pretty sure. Here's Josh on WGN. Hi, Josh.
Hey, just calling with one of the most epic finales of all time, MASH.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when that was. When they had the season finale MASH, it was 2 hours long, and it had, I think it was the most watched TV show up until that time. It was the most watched the most watched episode of television up until that time, and that was in 83, I think, when it went off the air.
I was a kid, and I can remember sitting with my grandfather watching it, going, "Are we really seeing this? Is this?"
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty heavy. It was pretty heavy. All right, Josh, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Yeah. It does still hold the record.
It still does.
Still does. For most watched television finale of all time is MASH.
Wow, okay. Well, I mean, it was a huge.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was massive. I remember I was in high school when that was on. Mm-hmm. 406 area code sends in a text, and you can call us or send a text. We're talking about TV finales, good ones, bad ones, controversial ones, in honor of Game of Thrones and of The Big Bang Theory, two big, really big shows that came to an end just this past week. So we want to hear about you. 312-981-7200. 406 area code says, good morning, Nick. The saddest and best ending of a series was MASH. I still cry when I see it. Yeah, it was pretty heavy. They really went out on a pretty heavy note. 301 area code says the original set The Fugitive had a good finale. Well, I mean, it built up to that. I mean, the whole series was about David Jansen trying to find the one-armed man. And I remember when, you know, my parents telling me, because I think I was a baby, or I was just a kid when The Fugitive had its finale. So I don't really, I mean, I've seen it since, but I don't remember. But I remember my parents saying it was like one of the biggest things ever was when The Fugitive had its final episode. Everybody was watching it. Let's see. Michael from Iowa says the best finale was the Newhart show. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And the worst was Designing Women. I don't specifically remember the finale of Designing Women. It's another show that I didn't really watch very often. But the Newhart finale was amazing. It was absolutely brilliant because it was, for those of you who don't know, this is the Newhart show where he ran the inn, and Larry and my brother Daryl and my other brother Daryl, that whole thing. Well, how they ended the series was that he woke up and it had all been a dream, and he woke up and he was in bed with Suzanne Pleshette, and they're back in the old apartment from the Bob Newhart show. And then nobody saw that coming, and they kept it a secret. They did a really good job. You know, CBS did a really good job keeping it a secret and not letting anybody know what happened. When Suzanne Pleshette shows up at the end of that episode, it was just fantastic. It was just, I mean, it was just nobody saw it coming, and it was hilarious, and it was nice to, you know, to tip the hat to the original Bob Newhart show. And any chance that you get to see Suzanne Pleshette is always good, as far as I'm concerned. But she passed away too young. You know, I remember watching episodes of the Bob Newhart show, the one from the 70s, which was a great, great show.
Amazing television.
Oh, my God. So funny and so good. But I remember seeing a few episodes where the actual plot line was, you know, like an old girlfriend of Bob's comes to the office or something. And then Suzanne Pleshette gets jealous and she's worried that Bob is. And I'm like, how in God's name would Suzanne Pleshette even be worried? Suzanne Pleshette, man. I mean, you know, like if I was Suzanne Pleshette, I wouldn't be worried about any other women. Are you kidding me? I'm Suzanne Pleshette. I loved her. She was so great and so funny and so hot.
I mean, it's tough. It's tough to be a triple threat like that. Great actor, man. Great comedian, and also
beautiful.
Stunning.
Just beautiful. 773 area code said Breaking Bad had a good finale, wrapped up all the loose ends well. In general, people are disappointed because now it all ends.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, that's the toughest part of any finale, is that knowing that it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought Breaking Bad had a good finale.
Yeah, they did a good job.
It was pretty successful. I thought it was pretty successful at what it tried to do.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's a show that I liked, didn't love. Everybody else thinks Breaking Bad's like the greatest show ever. Yeah. And I like it. I think it's good, yeah. But I like it in that same way that I like The Sopranos. It's not, you know.
Yeah. I mainly got on board with Breaking Bad just for Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
Everybody else I thought was like, yeah, they're pretty good. There's some other really cool people on this show. But Bryan Cranston was the central performance for me.
Well, you know.
That kept me going.
I had no idea that Bryan Cranston was such a great, like, dramatic actor. I knew him as Tim Watley. From Seinfeld and from Malcolm in the Middle. He's hilarious. He's so on Malcolm in the Middle. I also found it really hilarious that, you know, Malcolm in the Middle, he was known for wearing tighty whities. And the same thing happened with Breaking Bad. It was like, is that your thing? Is that Bryan Cranston's thing now? So, all right, we're going to take a break. We've got Esquire magazine, by the way, has this controversial finales, television finales of all time. We just wrapped up a couple of them with Big Bang Theory and, of course, Game of Thrones. And so we're going to be talking about good, bad, crazy TV finales. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll continue after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. It's Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. And also coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. All right. So we had a couple of really big series TV finales this past week. Last night, obviously, the big one was Game of Thrones. People are still digesting that one. We're talking about some of the best and worst and controversial TV finales of all time. And if you want to jump in here, it's 312-981-7200. Phone lines are open. You can send a text as well, 312-981-7200. Here's Mark on WGN. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi. Yeah, I was calling because you were discussing the Newhart finale.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned Breaking Bad after that. There actually is a connection there. They made a similar kind of a gag thing with Bryan Cranston waking up with Jane Kaczmarek.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a DVD extra for the final season, but I'm pretty sure you could probably find it on YouTube.
Well, I'd love to see that. That sounds hilarious.
Yeah, it's really well done. I mean, it's obviously an homage to the Newhart thing, sure. But it's fantastic. So.
Oh, I'm gonna have to. Thanks for letting me know that one. I'm definitely gonna check it out.
Sure thing.
All right, Mark. Thanks. Yeah, that's pretty funny. She was great on that show on Malcolm in the Middle. Actually, everybody was good on that show. Was funny. That was a really funny show.
It's a really weird show too.
Very strange show.
Very strange, but great.
And you gotta love the theme song.
Yeah, a little. They yeah, might
you're,
be.
You're not the boss of me. Yeah. Come on, man. I love that show. I really did. I just thought. And Cranston's hilarious on it.
He's great. I love the kid who plays Dewey.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yeah, that was one of those shows that, like, you know, it was like you didn't know what to make of it because it was on Fox. You know what I mean? It was like, I don't know. But yeah, that was. I'm trying to remember the finale of that one. I don't remember the finale of Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah, ran it from 2000 to 2006.
It was a good show, man.
Very good show. I just remember it being on. I don't know. I never really. I was a little bit too young to really understand like that show's end.
Yeah,
I was just like, oh, shows go on forever.
And oh, right.
Sudden, it just wasn't on anymore.
I'm trying to remember what the Happy Days finale was. It had to be a big deal, right? Because, I mean, that was like one of the most popular shows of the 70s.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Well, they had already, literally jumped the shark by that point.
Oh, right? Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. And there were spinoffs, too. I mean, you know, like obviously Laverne and Shirley. At one point, it was just Laverne. Because Cindy Williams left. But then she came back. They had the finale. She did come back for the finale.
Yeah.
But, That show got terrible when they moved to California. That's when the show
that lost its
yeah. When they back in that show, I'll tell you something, man. The first few seasons of that show, there weren't two funnier women on TV. I mean, it was like Lucy and Ethel funny. That's how good they were. They were so good on that show, and I thought that, and of course Lenny and Squiggy. Please, you can't beat Lenny and Squiggy. So, you know, one of the most controversial ones, obviously, and I hated it, was Seinfeld. I love the show, as everybody knows. If you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that I adore Seinfeld, and I've seen every episode like 900 times. But I thought the finale was terrible. I thought it was just terrible. Here's what they say. With the reported 76 million people watching, Seinfeld remained. I'll tell you what. One of my proudest things, though, ever. I thought for sure we were going to have to cancel. We were at the time the vinyl shop was up when Seinfeld was having its finale, and so I thought for sure we would have to cancel our Thursday night performance. We sold out.
Really?
Yeah. We were sold out. I was like, wow.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, there were VCRs in that day, but I thought for sure we were, nobody was going to show up.
No, no.
And we were all like, the cast, and everybody was just like, yeah, we're probably going to end up going home. And we were sold out. I couldn't believe it.
Well, it's kind of like how people are worried about, they were worried about Game of Thrones, oh man, no one's going to go watch anything else. I think they said their initial number was about 18 million. Which is really not that much. Yeah, I think more people don't watch that show than do watch it.
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it's subscription cable,
right?
You know, which is marked on a they that's a different level.
Yeah,
because there's not as many people who have HBO. Some people just don't want to spend money on HBO or Showtime or anything like that. I will say this though, Bill Hader's been making the rounds on the talk shows. Just plugging Barry. And Barry ended last night, too, which I'm going to watch as soon as I get home. That's the first thing I'm going to do is watch Barry. And he directed this episode, so I'm very excited, the final episode. But he was talking about, about how grateful he was that he had a lead-in.
Yeah.
You know, he's like nobody watches my show, and then all of a sudden, after Game of Thrones, there were, 17 million people watching,
right.
watching the show.
And that's the best part, is now I've talked to a lot of people who just had HBO for Thrones.
Yeah.
And then, I was just like, well, stick around for Barry. Watch a little Barry. Yeah. You can catch up on the first season in, two nights.
Especially the episode with the little girl, man.
Yeah.
I just...
And they're converts now. They were genius to put Barry right after Thrones, because now they have converts to this show. That's a nice little half-hour piece of television.
And that leads into the genius of John Oliver.
Exactly.
That's a good Sunday night.
It's a great Sunday night.
So 76 million people watched Seinfeld. It remains one of the most watched series finale in history, but its big finish left its fans deeply divided. While the gang went to jail after witnessing a carjacking, the real selling point was the laundry list of people who returned to act as character witnesses for these terrible humans. Some fans loved the finish. Others regarded it as disrespectful to both the characters and the intensely loyal fandom. Nevertheless, it remains a pivotal television moment, and Larry David made bank. Yeah, they're
still
all
to this day. Aren't they two of the most highest paid people in Hollywood?
They never have to. I mean, Seinfeld just loves doing stand up because that's what he most loves. And I love the comedians in cars getting coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fantastic, especially the one with Jerry Lewis. One of the best ones I've ever
seen. Very special.
But they all made bank on that show. You know, at one point they were the highest paid cast on television.
It's just crazy because I feel like my entire life, and I was alive for most of Seinfeld's run, obviously a child, but I just feel like Seinfeld has been in syndication for literally forever, and it will continue to be in syndication until the end of time.
I didn't watch it till it went into syndication. I never watched it when it was on in first run. I discovered it like 2000.
It was NBC,
NBC,
right?
Yeah.
And then they just started showing it on the U, and the rest is history.
That was their must see TV. TBS showed it like 50 times a day. So it was on Channel 32. It was on Fox in reruns. 219 area code says, I hated the way they ended Jericho and Lost. I never watched Jericho.
It had a very dedicated fan base.
I know it did. Yeah, I remember. I know people who really love that show
because it got canceled and then picked back up again.
And Lost obviously has a real controversial ending.
I think that's the first time I ever felt personally attacked by a television show.
Your predecessor, Dan Shigrew, loved the way they ended.
I've actually talked to him about it.
Yeah,
I just don't get it. Yeah, good for him.
He loved it. Mark the Breadman said, I was very disappointed with the series finale of Gotham. It seemed like a rush job on a fantastic show. That's a show I never watched. I heard it was good, though. People like it. And then Dwayne from Elwood said the best series finale was Revenge. That was a terrific show. That's a really underrated. Did you ever watch Revenge?
I watched a bit of it.
Yeah, that's a good show. That's one of those underrated TV shows. All right, we're talking about finales, series finales. Another one, Veep, ended too, which makes me sad because that show was just so brilliant. So, all right, we're going to take a break. The news is coming up right after this. Can you repeat the question? You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now. You're not the boss of me now. And you're not so big. You're not the boss of me now. Yeah. You're not the boss of me now. Malcolm in the Middle. What a great show that was. A really, really funny show. We're talking about series finales, 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Two big finales just happened this past week. You got your Big Bang Theory, and you've got Game of Thrones last night, obviously one of the biggest finales ever. And then, of course, Veep wrapped up last week. And just your average Joe from 815 area code says, hey, Nick, don't forget Veep wrapped up last week with their season finale. And one more controversial finale was Sons of Anarchy, where Jax drove his bike into a semi driven by no less than a cameo by Michael Chiklis as the truck driver. Speaking of Michael Chiklis, what about The Shield?
Yeah, that was big. That was a big show.
It was a great show. And that had a great ending. That had a very, very good, that had a great finale. Here's what they say about Sons of Anarchy. Sons of Anarchy was always fated to end tragically, but no one would have guessed that it would have hit them as hard as a truck. No, literally. Jax drove himself directly into a tractor trailer, a la City of Angels, with his more motors and leather. The Hamlet-inspired series caught a lot of fans off guard in its final episodes, which is why you do the reading in high school, with a savage number of Gemma, a savage murder of Gemma, and that gruesome final scene. Jax knew his only way out was via death, but viewers weren't having it. Was Gemma, is that Peg Bundy?
It might. I'll be honest with you, I never watched that show.
Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah. I'm not big into motorcycles.
Yeah, I watched it here, and that was never. It never really grabbed me. But I do love, why am I blanking on her name? Katie Sagal.
Yeah.
I love her.
She's great.
Oh, I love her.
Always remember her as Leela.
Leela?
Yeah. In Futurama.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She's the voice of Leela.
Yeah, she is. Futurama. 630 area code says, how about Wonder Years? I don't remember the... does he not end... He doesn't end up with Winnie, right? And everybody was mad?
I think so. I just remember I remember it being on. I never followed it.
Yeah, that was another show. That was another show that I didn't really watch regularly. But I just remember, I know that people who did watch it were disappointed that he didn't end up with the girl or something.
Poor Fred Savage.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor kid. Who is it? That was Daniel Stern who did the voiceover. Who did the voiceover stuff on
it? Oh, he was, really?
It was Daniel Stern. Because, I mean, obviously it was inspired by Stand By Me, that the whole, you know, the whole thing. And Stand By Me... who was the voiceover in Stand By Me?
It's
Dreyfus?
Yeah, Richard Dreyfus.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. All right, how about Dexter? The finale of Dexter. I know a lot of people hated it.
Yeah, it's not good.
After 8 seasons of following Dexter Morgan and his problematic compulsion to kill, the series took a strange turn and decided that the only way for Dexter to get the ending he wanted would be to go live in solitude in the woods as a lumberjack. The big finale twist felt underwhelming and half-baked for a show that pushed the boundary so often. Even Michael C. Hall admitted on Reddit that he experienced sadness when reading the final script, which is generous actor speak for disappointed. Instead of taking a big narrative swing, Dexter took a swing for a tree trunk, and creative decision hit the viewers the same way with a thud. So that's how it ended? He became a lumberjack?
Yep.
What?
Mm-hmm. That was that.
Wow, that just seems weird.
Yeah, and I'm not one to try and be like, well, what they should have done was this, because I'm not a writer, you know.
Yeah.
I don't write television, but I know what I like and I know what I don't like, and yeah. I certainly don't like that.
Yeah, all right. I didn't see it, so I don't know. What was it? We were talking about this a few years ago. We were talking about how ALF ended. ALF, the final episode of ALF ended with him about to be captured by the authorities and killed. And then they had to do a TV movie because they didn't know that it was going to be off the air. They didn't know it was going to be canceled. So they had him finally the authorities find Alf and they're going to kill him. They're going to vivisect him. And
what the hell?
Yeah, no, seriously.
Wait, is it like the puppet Alf?
Yeah, yeah. That's how they ended it.
What kind of show is this?
And they and so they had to do a TV movie to explain to everybody Alf was okay, because they thought Alf got iced. And so and I never watched Alf. I know people who did watch it, and when I heard someone told me how Alf ended, I was like, you got to be kidding me. But that's how it ended. Like, it was about to be, it was like, it was a cliffhanger with Alf getting iced.
Honestly, that, in retrospect, that would have been kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember people going, people were freaking out about, you can't kill Alf. Where's the cat? I want to eat a cat.
What was the deal with that? What was Alf even about? I just know the character of Alf. What was the show?
Well, his name wasn't Alf. His name was somebody will know. Alf is alien life form. That's what Alf stands for. And he had a name. I can't remember, but they called him Alf. But he did have like a different name. And so I don't remember. I mean, all I know is that this puppet, alien puppet Alf, moves in with a wacky house, you know, with a wacky household.
Kind of like a Harry and the Hendersons situation.
Yeah, and he wanted to eat cats. He hated cats. He ate cats. That's what he ate. No, where's the cat? I'm gonna eat a cat. That's my Alf, by the way. Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't watch it, you know, but it was popular in the 80s, you know. It was a very, very popular show, and I've seen 10 minutes of maybe an episode.
Yeah.
And then someone told me that's how it ended.
Oh, my God.
That's how they ended it.
Apparently, Alf's name is Gordon Shumway.
That's it, yeah.
That's Trevor from Antioch.
That's right. That's his name.
Gordon Shumway.
That's his name. Yeah, Alf. And they ended this. It's a kid show too. You know, this was a show that most, you know, kids liked it because it was a puppet. You know, where's the cat? And so, let's end it with the authorities trapping Alf. That's how it ended. That's how it ended.
And then someone was like, "We can't do this."
No, because they like I said, they didn't know they were going to be canceled. So when the show got canceled, they were like, "We can't leave it like this." We have to explain to all the kids that are watching that Alf is actually okay. So they did a TV movie to wrap it up. Alf. Oh, man. What kind of drunk came up with that idea?
It was the 80s. It was a different time.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of blow involved, I would imagine. It's the 80s. How about this one? You want to talk about weird dinosaurs? Did you ever watch Dinosaurs?
Yeah. Wasn't a big fan.
Dinosaurs was ABC's white-collar paleontological play on the sitcom boom of the 90s. Follow the Sinclair family. The series told the everyday story of a dinosaur family that typically ended with humor. Though the series took a few swipes at social issues throughout its four-season run, none were more bold than its final move. After the dinosaur people of Earth took off the planet for granted, a massive storm was triggered, effectively ending their species forever. That's Baby Sinclair and all. The series finishes on a zoom out of the Sinclair home with ominous music playing before breaking to a dinosaur newscaster telling the world goodbye one last time. Oh, God.
That's dope. I like that.
Oh, my God.
Just go.
Wow. Let's see. 815 area code said Sex and the City would have been perfect had they destroyed that awesome show with those two awful movies. Oh, God, those movies. They were so terrible. And I wasn't a fan. I mean, I watched the show every once in a while, but I was not, you know, a huge fan of it.
But it's too bad because it was a crop of very, very talented actors.
Yeah. No. I mean, you know, but those movies were just awful.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. 608 area code, Quantum Leap was weird.
Yeah, overall that show was weird.
That's Dan Chigrou, my former producer, favorite TV show of all time.
Is Quantum Leap?
He loves Quantum Leap. He loves Bakula. He's got a...
Scott Bakula?
He loves Scott Bakula.
Is he into Star Trek Enterprise?
Sure. I know that he is into the NCIS that he's on, because...
There's a Scott Bakula. Oh, my God.
Bakula is on one of the NCISs.
Well, you know what they say, Nick. Once you go...
Yeah.
I can't go.
Yeah. JB says, Nick, I wasn't one of them, but there were a lot of complaints about How I Met Your Mother and how that ended.
Yeah, that was super disappointing.
I never watched that show, but that's you know, when we talk about this in the past, we've talked about this. How I Met Your Mother comes up a lot.
Yeah. You could have cut that show down by about 3 seasons, maybe even 4 seasons.
It's on in the middle of the night here, and I see it every once in a while, up on the screen here with no sound. Because it's on at like, I think it's on at like 2:30 in the morning or something. I think it's on the U at like 2:30 in the morning. So every once in a while, I'll look up and I'll see it on screen, and I'll be like, "That's weird." Because there's there was one episode that I looked up and I saw and every one of the characters, they were just smoking.
Yeah, they did. That was actually a really good episode too.
I don't know. I was just taken aback by it. I'm like, yeah. What the hell is going on here?
It was like, all about the last, like, them getting over their. The smoking was representative of a bunch of stuff, but it was actually a really good episode. But
yeah.
They stretched that series into way too many seasons. They wanted to be done way earlier.
Yeah, that's what I heard. That's what I heard. It went on way too long, and everybody was disappointed. I got in the article here, they actually mentioned How I Met Your Mother. I'll get to that one in a second, but we're going to take a break here. We want to hear from you guys. We are talking about TV finales. Two big ones just happened this past week, and so we want to talk about finales, series finales, the good ones, the bad ones, the ones in between. 312-981-7200, and we will return. Favorite Zeppelin song. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio and here till 5 a.m. And So we're talking about TV finales. We had some big ones just this past week, and we were talking about the good ones and the bad ones, which ones are great for you. We're also going to have some Chicago-centric old slang words that we're going to talk about as well, and much more. Now, we were talking about How I Met Your Mother before the break, and if you guys want to jump in, what were your favorites or least favorites or most disappointing or best TV finales of all time following Game of Thrones here? It was just ended last night. So How I Met Your Mother, any How I Met Your Mother fan you speak to is likely still not over the botched finale. Proof that an intended finale isn't always how you should stick your landing. The titular mother appeared in the final season only to die soon after. After years of will they, won't they, between Robin and Ted and Barney, honestly, the narrator of the series finally leaves his post of narrating the whole life story to his kids and goes to be with the woman he's supposed to be with. The move didn't make a ton of sense, and most viewers had given up on a Ted and Robin reunion. The otherwise beloved series has an almost universally despised finale.
I watched that show from day one.
Did you?
Yeah, it was a really big thing. Like, I centered my Monday nights around How I Met Your Mother, and it was a great show. There was a lot I liked about it, but then last couple seasons were just really disappointing, and it's one of those things where you just watch because, well,
it's on.
It's
yeah.
on, and yeah. you've been doing it for so long.
Right. 847 area code sends a text about, what about the Mary Tyler Moore series finale? Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. The whole group hug. Where they all walk, they're all hugging each other, and they want to get some tissues because they're crying, and then they all move together. Yeah, and everybody gets let go except for Ted. That was a great show, man. That was the Mary Tyler Moore show. That's classic TV. Yeah, I've talked about this before. That Saturday night lineup on CBS in the 70s was ridiculous, man. All in a row. It was All in the Family, Mary Tyler Moore, MASH, and why am I blanking on the other one? Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
And then Carol Burnett. That was the Saturday night.
Did you see that they're doing a live All in the Family thing? Ike Barinholtz, right, isn't it?
There's other, Woody Harrelson, if I'm not mistaken, is playing Archie. Jimmy Kimmel's hosting, and they're doing All in the Family and the Jeffersons, and Jamie Foxx is playing George Jefferson.
That's a great choice.
I think it's on next week because it's May sweeps.
So yeah.
I think it's on sometime this week. It might be on like Tuesday or Wednesday. But yeah, I'll definitely watch that. There's no question about it. I'll definitely watch it. I know a lot of people are like, no, leave it alone, but I would like to see that, you know? I happen to be a big Woody Harrelson fan, so, you know.
He's a weird guy.
Yeah, I like him though. I mean, I like his, I like
him
his
on
weirdness
Cheers
too.
Is great.
He was great on Cheers, and you know that the other thing about that was a tough role for him to step into.
Yeah,
because Coach, man, Coach was just the best. Coach was beautiful, and you know to come in and try and replace Coach was, you know, they went a different route. I mean, they did need a dumb character because Coach was dumb. You know, been plunked with too many like baseballs. So they went a different route, but Woody Harrelson was great on that show. So, see, here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Dick.
Hi.
I was going to mention the Waltons. I was saying on CBS, and later it was on syndication on WGN. John Boy, who was played later on by a guy named Robert Whiteman, was in New York, and he was a writer, and he was living in an apartment, and he had a roommate, and he hadn't sold any stories for a long time, so his landlord, a lady, threw him out. And so the Waltons were worried about him, and they sent his brother Jason to get him, and Jason came and got him home. Oh, no. It was Aaron came to New York to look for him, and she was talking to his landlord lady, and she said, that bomb, I threw him out. And she said, my brother? So, anyway, Jason came and got him and brought him home to Walton's Mountain. And the Baldwin sisters were going to have a party, and they were going to invite everybody they knew, and they sent out invitations. Well, nobody came to their party except the Waltons, and John Boy showed up.
Okay. I don't know that story. I wasn't familiar with
that. You never
story.
Heard that one?
No, because I never watched.
Unfortunately, kind of the Waltons had jumped the shark, too, because Ralph Wade and Michael Leonard had left the show.
Yeah.
Alan Corby had gotten sick and Will Geary had died.
Yeah.
So basically, the kids were the ones that were carrying the show.
Right.
Can I mention a couple other things?
Real quick, John, yeah.
Howdy Doody, which was more of a children's show. The last show that aired on NBC, I was only a little kid at the time. Clarabelle turned to the camera and said goodnight.
Yeah.
And that was the last, that was the only time we were spoken on camera.
Yeah, Clarabelle never talked. So that's
right.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Okay, John, thanks for the call. I never watched the Waltons.
I'm only marginally aware of them because we had neighbors called the Waltons.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So it was, my folks would always make jokes about how they were the Waltons.
John, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I have I never watched the Waltons. It was not that, we didn't watch the Waltons. We didn't watch Little House on the Prairie. All those sort of family-oriented shows of the 70s, we didn't watch. I was too busy watching stuff like Three's Company when I was a kid. And
some Sanford and Son.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that goes without saying. That's Red Fox in that show, man. It still makes me laugh every single time I see it. I don't care how many times he does it. Oh, man, it's the big one. It makes me laugh every single time. All right, how about this? Lost. Perhaps the most controversial finale here. You either love the Lost finale or you hate it. There's not a lot in between. After six seasons of unanswered questions, polar bears, and time travel, the final few episodes seem to abandon all reason. Viewers held out, hoping that the series finale would answer the dangling questions, but it all led to a church and an alternate timeline where most of the survivors on the doomed Oceanic 815 reunited before moving on, quote-unquote. Some interpreted it as them being dead all along. Others considered it to be a touching message about the power of humanity. Most were just mad about those polar bears, but the whole series ended on a quiet shot of the beach, deserted and lifeless, the day of the crash. Yeah, I gave up on Lost. I was on board for the first like season, you know, and I thought the pilot was amazing. I still think that the pilot's one of the best pilots I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was on board for a while, but when you know, and then I started to get all the mysteries and the new nuances and stuff were just they started to get it too much for me. So I stopped watching it, but my ex-wife kept watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And so one night, and I was not watching it, you know, with her or anything like that. But so one night we go out with a friend of mine, and we go out to dinner, and then after dinner we go back to his house because he had just gotten the Wii, you know, the game, the Wii, and we did some Wii bowling and stuff like that. So After we finished, you know, playing with the Wii, he's like, let's watch Lost. And so, you know, and I don't watch it, but he and my wife, you know, were like, yeah, let's put it on. So I'm sitting there. I don't care. We had beer. I was fine. So I'm sitting there, and I literally had no idea what was going on because I had not watched it for about a season and a half or something. And so I was like, what in God's name is happening? Like the episode that we watched, you know, there was the island was on a turntable or something. And I was like, what?
The whole moving of the island.
Yeah.
Thing. It was just bonkers.
Yeah.
So. It represents the worst of J.J. Abrams style thinking. And, you know, the guy who wrote it, Damon Lindelof, he would go on to write Prometheus, which is a movie that I enjoy, but suffers from the same problems.
Wait, you like Prometheus?
I like Prometheus.
Oh, my God.
But it suffers from the same problems where they just set stuff up and never pay it off.
I thought Prometheus was unwatchable. Unwatchable. Oh. And that last Covenant one wasn't very good either. The Alien Covenant.
You're talking to one of the biggest Alien fanboys of all time. I'll watch literally anything about Alien.
Yeah. Yeah. God, I thought Prometheus was horrible. Oh, my God. All right. Who was it? I'm pretty much convinced that Ridley Scott has only made two good movies.
I'm at four.
Alien and Blade Runner.
Yeah, I've got Alien, Blade Runner, Thelma and Louise.
Oh, yeah, right, Thelma and Louise,
and
yes.
And then Kingdom of Heaven, but the director's
cut. Oh, right, okay. We did talk about that before. All right. I always forget about Thelma and Louise, which is a great movie. Okay, we got a break. The news is coming up after this. All right, more TV finales. We want to hear from you. 312-981-7200.
Waiting for an answer, but I waited 25 years.
Hey, that's Buffalo Tom. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate's Skyline Studios here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell coming up at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're talking about TV finales right now, and we want to hear from you guys. We had two big ones just this past week, Big Bang Theory and, of course, last night with Game of Thrones, which was a big, big event and that everybody was very, very excited about. And some people are kind of split down the middle about what they thought of the actual finale itself. But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about controversial or good or bad or great TV finales. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. So let's see. Here is Donald on WGN. Hi, Donald.
Hi, nice to talk to you again. I unfortunately mentioned a lot of the things that you'd already covered, but the Frasier always struck me as an interesting way to... It actually took several episodes to wrap up a lot of things.
Yeah.
And then it made you want more. Actually, I felt like when he's on that plane to Chicago, you know, that was certainly a little surprise at the end. And I think they want to bring it back now.
They are supposed to be doing a reboot of Frasier, but I gotta say that I think a major loss to the world is John Mahoney, and to not have John Mahoney in the show, I think it takes a real hit in that regard.
Yeah, because it'll never replace him.
No, of course not. And he was so great on that show. I mean, he was great in everything, but he was really, really funny on that show, and he was, everything about that. Well, I really loved that show just in general. I thought everybody was great on it. I thought it didn't wear out its welcome. It was as good as Cheers, which is a hard thing to do. When you do like a spinoff of a show, especially a show that was as popular and as beloved as Cheers, and you do it that well, that's a hard thing to do, and they did a great job with it. And the finale, I thought the finale was really great. I'm a big fan of Frasier.
Mm-hmm. Because it took farce comedy and gave it a serious side,
Exactly. Really good, smart writing, too. All right. Hey, Donald, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. 262 area code says, hey, Nick, that 70s show had a strange season finale with Topher Grace off making a movie, and he made a cameo outside with Donna, but it looked like they were filmed that was filmed before because he wasn't in the scene with the rest of the cast. I don't even remember. I don't remember. That 70s Show is another one that I watched sporadically. I never had like a huge attachment to it. I thought it was fine. I thought it was, you know, I thought it had some funny stuff in it, but I couldn't tell you how that 70s Show ended. 847 area code said, how did Taxi end? I do not remember how Taxi ended. Does anybody remember how Taxi ended? That was a show that I watched all the time too. Yeah. If anybody remembers, either call us or text us with the details on how Taxi ended. I just don't remember. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's see. Here is Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Nick. Good morning.
Good morning.
I know you weren't a big fan of the show, or you didn't watch it, but I became a big fan of it. It was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I thought the finale of that show did a pretty good job of what they built up to.
Yeah, I don't remember. I wasn't a fan of Buffy.
Yeah, it was just they did a whole big grand like end of the world thing, and it pretty much built up from about halfway at the end of the season, but it wasn't a letdown. And the other spinoff from that, Angel, same thing. They both did a good job. I mean, they were fantastic, but they were satisfying.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say something, if I could, about Alien and what you were saying about Prometheus and all the other. I had this epiphany after Aliens, because I went to see Alien Resurrection, and I was looking forward to it so much, and I just wanted it to be so good. And Alien 3, excuse me, that's what I meant to say. Alien 3, I was just looking so forward to seeing it, and it just, you know, I was forcing myself to enjoy it because it just wasn't what Aliens was, or an Alien. But I had this epiphany, kind of like, I think the originators of the original movie, I don't think they ever wrote they were never trying to conceive of any stories that really explained, like, lots. I think what made Aliens such a good movie was what you didn't know.
Yeah.
And it's like all the sequels have been, like, trying to profit and, like reverse engineer the storyline. So what I've chosen to do is, I've never chosen to, you know, buy into the stories they've told. For me, the story ended with Aliens, and I choose to not go in the universe of what those plots of those writers decided to be.
Yeah. I don't blame you. I've seen all the Alien movies, and I actually like. I like the first four. I like all four of them. I like Alien 3. I think Resurrection is good as well. Can't stand Prometheus, and I hated Covenant. And I don't even, you know, the Alien Predator movies. That's just not even a thing.
You're breaking my heart.
But I remember being angry after Prometheus. Like, I just remember being in the theater going, "What the hell was that?" And with the exception of a couple of kind of cool action sequences in Covenant, which was like Ridley Scott's sort of like desperate attempt to James Cameron his movie. You know what I mean? Suddenly there's machine guns and, you know, there's soldiers and stuff. That's not what Ridley Scott did. You know, that was Cameron. But yeah, I was that was kind of lost on me. But I it's still the first Alien is. I still think the first Alien is the best out of all of them, and I like Aliens a lot. I think Aliens is great. It's a completely different kind of movie, than the original. So, but yeah, okay, Rich, thanks for the call. Buffy is another one of those shows that I never, you know, my friends are all, you know, like, it's one of those shows that should be in my wheelhouse. You know, because as you guys know, that I have a tendency to have the same taste in TV as 14-year-old girls. So I should love Buffy because it's a hot girl beating people up and kicking butt. And it's got vampires and supernatural stuff in it. So I should love it. And I've made attempts to get into Buffy. And it just does not do it for me. And it just does not. And people are like, well, you're not watching the right season. So the people who have lent me their DVDs of seasons, here is this season, you should watch this one. And I tried, and I just never got into it. And it's so many of my friends are like completely shocked that I never liked that I never got into Buffy.
I find Joss Whedon to be a generally kind of frustrating writer.
Oh, I loved Avengers.
He did a great job. He did a great job with Avengers, but he's just a very, I don't know, he's really quippy a lot and very, like, self-aware, which sometimes works to his favor and sometimes doesn't.
My favorite thing that he has his name on is Cabin in the Woods. That's absolutely my favorite thing that he's associated with. I love that movie. I think Cabin in the Woods is fantastic. Really, really, really cool. Very, very clever. And I just, I'm a big, big, big fan of Cabin in the Woods. From the moment I saw it, the first time I saw it, I was just beside my, and that last 15 minutes is unbelievable.
Yeah. And Bradley Whitford gives the performance. He's of a career.
The
He's
merman.
So funny.
It's just, both of them, Richard Jenkins too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They're
yeah.
both great. And I think everybody is great in that movie. And then Sigourney Weaver shows up and it's like, all right. I really, really love that movie.
That's when he's working on a level that I think really works.
Yeah. He didn't direct it, though.
He didn't direct it. That was Drew Goddard
right.
who did that. So his writing there I think is very clever. But I wonder if someone reined him in a little bit.
Well, you know, I don't know. The other thing is that because I really thought the Avengers was great. I thought the first Avengers movie was really, really
incredibly
terrific.
Well done.
And I thought he did a great job. His writing was not apparent at all in the, Justice League?
Yeah, no.
I mean, you know, he came in and did the rewrite.
He then
took over for the direction.
I feel like he added a few jokes to, like, The Flash to make him a little bit clearer.
Well, I think what he did, I think the only thing to me, the only scene in that movie that has Joss Whedon's voice at all is the scene where the lasso of truth is wrapped around Aquaman, and he's sharing way too much. That was like, okay, this is the only thing that I can see that has any kind of Whedon, you know, flavor to it. God, that was a terrible movie. Oh, those DC movies are awful. I liked Wonder Woman. That's it. As far as like the new DC movies go, I like Wonder Woman. My favorite Batman movie of all time is Batman Returns. Because it's the most Tim Burton. It's not really a Batman movie. It's a Tim Burton movie. So, yeah. And Michelle Pfeiffer. Oh, man. Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns. She's my favorite Catwoman. And I know a lot of people think I'm nuts, but she is my favorite Catwoman. All right. Let's take a break here for the weather. I'll give you the weather, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about some TV finales, some big ones that have just passed. Obviously, last night, Game of Thrones was probably the biggest of the year. We also had Veep, and we also had The Big Bang Theory that wrapped up its series as well. And we want to hear from you. Finales, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. We want to hear from you, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 is Steve Brzanich with the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So in honor of Game of Thrones and its the big finale from last night, we are now talking about TV finales. What are the best? What are the most controversial? What are the worst? What are the most memorable TV finales? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's Clyde on WGN. Go ahead, Clyde.
Hey, great show again. Another J.J. Abrams one that I loved from the beginning was Alias.
Mm.
But then the last season just went a little wonky.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, no, yeah. I did. Yeah, and I was disappointed with it, too. I was disappointed with how it ended up.
Whatever that mysterious aura that was turning everybody into zombies or whatever.
It was just, it got very weird. It did.
Yeah.
It did get very weird. But it was a good show while it lasted, though.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
All right, Clyde, thanks, man.
Thanks, man.
You know how Alias got created, right?
No.
You know the story? Okay. Jennifer Garner, by the way, had been on Felicity. She played Noel's girlfriend, when they were actually married in real life. Scott Foley. Because I'm getting my Scotts mixed up, because there's Scott Speedman and then there's Scott Foley. So Scott Foley was married to Jennifer Garner, and then they got divorced because she was sleeping with the guy in Alias. So then she ended up marrying Ben Affleck, which I'm sure turned out great. So anyway, they had a rap party. I think it was season three of Felicity. They had a rap party for season three of Felicity. Of course, J.J. Abrams, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's the greatest thing he's ever created is Felicity. But anyway, they had a rap party and Kerry Russell got drunk. And so, hold on a second.
Hi, I'm Kerry Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
I know you do. Anyway, she got drunk, and she went up to J.J. Abrams, and she's like, hey, wouldn't it be hilarious if, like, next season we discover that Felicity is actually, like, a spy? Wouldn't that be fantastic? And J.J. Abrams went, yeah, I think that would. And Alias was born. Because of drunk Kerry Russell. Wouldn't it be great if Felicity was just an undercover spy?
Good for you, Kerry.
I love her. 630 area code says, hey, Nick, I was a big Downton Abbey fan and was completely satisfied with the happy ending. Now there's a movie coming out. They're doing a Downton Abbey movie. I think it comes out like next month.
Oh, my.
847 area code says, not TV, but how much are you looking forward to the new Godzilla movie? I don't know. How much you got? I cannot wait. I already got my tickets, man. I'm ready, man. Got my tickets, seeing it in the IMAX.
Gotta.
Yeah. I happen to really love Godzilla movies. Man, I grew up on them. I grew up on Godzilla movies. So... All right, let's see. The finale of Mad Men. The portrait of mid-century white-collar America had its up-and-down moments, but it remains one of the most critically acclaimed shows of the 21st century. As the final season came to a close, the women of the 1960s ad world continued to hold the show together while Don Draper fell apart. With the finale on the horizon, it appeared that Don was all but deconstructed, and yet the series' final moments suggest that the anti-hero bounces back, turning his near breakdown into advertising genius. Some said it was a perfect finale. Others argued it resolved Don's story too quickly. Either way, we're talking about it. Yeah, that was a good show.
Yeah, I mean, and it launched some really important careers.
Yeah, Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Chief among them, really.
Yeah.
In terms of, I mean, Jon Hamm works, but Elizabeth Moss is...
Well, she's just, you know...
She's captured a conversation.
Well, I mean, you know, she's my favorite actress on the planet right now. Elizabeth Moss. I think she's unbelievable. Her performance in Her Smell, I've never seen a better performance this year. I won't see a better performance this year. I know I won't see a better performance. Yeah. All right. What about The Office, the finale for The Office? They say this one is a toss-up. The back and forth of whether Michael Scott would return for the show's final season clouded an otherwise perfect series. After missing season 8 and popping up in and out through season 9, the series eventually learned that having Michael swoop in one last time in the end was definitely the right move. After a few uneven seasons, the final episode served its purpose, revisiting the best employees that Dunder Mifflin ever had. This finale is less of a controversy than much more needed smooth landing to a very rocky descent. Yeah, last couple of seasons with The Office was a little rough.
Yeah.
That was a show that was on too long.
I think when Michael leaves, they should have just started. They should have maybe done like a short season, like a half season without him.
Yeah.
But just wrap it up immediately because he was the core of that show.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that the ensemble's not great, because they are great. And it was a show that was spinning its wheels. The last couple of seasons, it was like, okay. And I really like The Office. I think The Office is great and really funny, and I like everybody on it. But once they started bringing the younger kids in, like the kid who was in Sex Drive, the guy with the glasses.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I can't remember the kid's name, but when they brought him and that other guy in,
yeah.
I was like,
It wasn't working. And I firmly believe...
I can't believe I remember the kid from Sex Drive. Yeah,
that's a great movie. I love that movie.
I like that movie, too. I think James Marsden is hilarious in that movie. Yeah. hilarious. But yeah, so The Office was on a little bit too long.
Yeah, most shows shouldn't be on more than about 5 or 6 years.
You know, the original British Office, there's only 12 episodes.
Yeah,
that's it.
In and out,
and the Christmas special.
Yep.
So they know how to do it over there, man.
They in Britain. Yeah,
yeah. Here's Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Nick. How are you, man?
All right. What's up?
The one I didn't like was the ending of 24. That was a series where don't call me during, you know, when it's on. I want to watch it.
Yeah.
But the ending of him just kind of like walking away, and it was just really disappointing.
Yeah, I had given up on 24. I stopped watching 24 when Elisha Cuthbert was trapped by a mountain lion. That's when I went, okay. I think that's when I was like, yeah. And he kills a guy with his teeth in one episode. And I was like, okay, I think I'm going to stop watching this. And I did not watch the reboot at all when they rebooted it.
I tried to watch it, and I was like, nah, can't do it.
Yeah,
can't
well, it's got to be Jack Bauer, man. I mean, that's right. The deal. You can't have another dude play that part. So,
and as far as Godzilla, I'm hoping Gamera makes a guest appearance.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think you're going to be in good shape.
I'm hoping.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, man.
We're going to have a week next week. It's going to be something
because it's dead. It's Deadwood and Godzilla. You know, they debut on the same day. HBO Deadwood, the movie,
man,
and then Godzilla.
Yeah, so they don't have to worry too much about Game of Thrones in terms of that being over. You come in with Deadwood.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You come
in with
Westworld's coming back. Not my favorite show, but people like it.
I don't know what the hell's going on that show.
I don't think people who like that show know what's going on in that show.
I watch it, and I'm like, and every time it's when it's over, I'm like, what the hell just happened? It is a very, very...
Where's Yul Brynner?
I just, man, you got to have Yul Brynner, Richard Benjamin, and James Brolin. That's Westworld right there. But I just happen to also just adore Evan Rachel Wood. I will watch her do anything. Anything.
She's very good.
She is lovely. I love her in Across the Universe. She's so great in that movie. Everybody hates that movie but me. Okay. The news is coming up right after this. Goodfellas, immediately.
I'm looking around the studio right now. Is there a helicopter?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's immediate. I can't even
think of anything.
No, can't think of anything. I mean, that whole sequence is just ridiculous. That and the use of music in that. I mean, Goodfellas, you know, that's a pretty good movie.
pretty good.
Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Hey, my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. That's coming up. It's Monday morning. Got to start off your Monday morning with a joke from my dad. So that's coming up. We were talking about finales, TV finales, because obviously there was kind of a big one last night with Game of Thrones. And you were happy with the fine with it, right?
I came to terms with it. I think you know, as showrunners, D.B. Weiss and David Benioff didn't do their they didn't do the work. You know, I get the outcome they got to, but they didn't show their work, and it was a really short season. So I don't know why they didn't just ask for more episodes. I feel like they could have gotten more episodes if they wanted. Maybe they didn't want more episodes because they're done with it.
Yeah.
They're going to go make Star Wars movies now.
Yeah.
They've got that coming out in 2022 or whatever. So maybe they're just like, yeah, we've had enough of this series.
Yeah. I think Benioff should make another 25th hour.
The 26th hour.
26th hour. That's right. My favorite Spike Lee movie.
It's a great movie.
Because
he wrote the book, right?
Yeah. Wrote the book. He wrote the screenplay.
Amazing.
Yep. Here's another finale that people are talking about. Roseanne. Before her Trumpian turn, Roseanne Barr was responsible for one of the greatest sitcoms about the working class in television history. The series dared to be provocative, not because it was a gimmick, but because the subjects it tackled shined a light on what it was like to be a blue collar in America. But after a bizarre lottery win, that was really one of the stupidest.
Very strange.
Twist. Roseanne took viewers on a massive final episode roller coaster, revealing in a 10-minute monologue from Roseanne Conner that the family's patriarch had died a couple of seasons prior, and that integral parts of the series were fabricated in the mind of Roseanne. a motherly attempt to write her family the way she believed they would be happiest. The finale split viewers, with a good number of them staunchly opposed to the narrative twist. Yeah, once the whole lottery thing happened, that was when the show clearly jumped the shark. No question about it. And then finally, we have The Sopranos. It was the cut to black that made HBO subscribers panic in fear that their televisions had cut off too soon. We talked about this earlier. Don't Stop Believin' soundtrack, the final moments of what may still be HBO's greatest creation. But the big finish for Tony Soprano didn't scratch an itch for everyone. The series left the fate of the mob boss up in the air with a hard-to-stop, making people furiously wonder if he'd lived or died at the hand of a few different people. Some Sopranos fans call the move genius. Others call it BS. Has Chase ever said what he thought happened to? Because I think they did interview him at one point.
I think he had a book come out either early this year or last year, talking a little bit about The Sopranos, because this is 20 years of The Sopranos this year.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's ever said exactly what happens. I think he's more talked obliquely about why he felt like that was the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's ever given a straight answer.
I remember watching it, and when it was over, I was just saying, you got to be kidding me. And obviously we talked about it on the air, you know.
It's just proof that David Chase can get away with anything.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So, I don't know. Very, very weird. Now, the original run of Twin Peaks, not the return from 2 years ago, which of course is genius, but it was you know, because we had a you know, because the whole mystery the first two seasons of the show was who killed Laura Palmer. That was obviously the big thing, and it clearly it was her dad. I mean, that was like the only sort of like emotionally satisfying ending that you could come up with was that.
Yeah.
It made the most sense. And I was very satisfied. I was very satisfied with the way that the first season ended. And then I remember hating Fire Walk With Me the first time I saw it. I remember I hated it. I was like, what the hell? And then of course I've grown to really like it. I also love the fact that when they did the return, that the mythology in Fire Walk With Me was all over it. Like they really, yeah, you know, he
did. It was very much intact.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. And I didn't know whether they were going to go for that or not. But yeah. And then the way that the return ended was, what year is it? I know a lot of people were kind of disappointed by it. Do you know who's phenomenal in Fire Walk With Me? Is Cheryl Lee.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's an unbelievable performance. It really is truly an unbelievable performance. She didn't get to do a lot on the series, obviously, because she was dead, you know, and they did have flashbacks and stuff. But, man, she really knocked it out of the park that's an intense performance.
Yeah.
And Fire Walk With Me.
And I'm pretty sure Fire Walk With Me had walkouts when it premiered at camp.
Oh, yeah, no, people hated it. People hated it. I was one of them. I was like, what the hell, you know?
Yeah.
I had to adjust. Then after I saw, you know, when I saw it a second time, I was like, okay, but I just have to, I came in with preconceived notion.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the problem is that if you go into David Lynch with any sort of preconceived notion about what you're going to see, you might be a little bit disappointed.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, like another phenomenal female performance in a Lynch movie is Laura Dern in Inland Empire.
Oh my God.
She's unbelievable in that movie.
That's a wild, wild picture.
That's a great movie.
It's awesome.
Oh, I love that movie.
But it's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. There really isn't any David Lynch movies that I don't like. Hell, I like Dune. I'm not kidding. I like Dune.
I know. Dune.
I like Dune, man.
I know.
Straight Story, fantastic.
Well, Straight Story is just, it's really nice. It's just a really nice movie.
It's a beautiful movie. But it feels like a David Lynch movie. What's weird?
Totally.
It's like a G-rated Disney movie that David Lynch. I remember when it first came out, I was like, "Wait a minute, hold on a second. It's a G-rated David Lynch movie from Disney, and it felt like a David Lynch movie. And it was just the portrait of you know these towns and everything. It had a very Lynchian feel to it, without severed ears or rape or you know, all that other weird stuff. Oh, I know which movie I don't like that much. Mulholland Drive.
You don't like Mulholland Drive? Mm-mm. Oh,
nope. That's the only one that I know. You know which one? I'll tell you. I adore, and I also think it's one of the sexiest movies ever made. Lost Highway.
Yeah,
I love that movie. And I think it's like truly one of the sexiest movies ever made.
Bill Pullman is great in it.
Great. And Baltazar Getty.
Mm-hmm.
Patricia Arquette.
Justin Theroux.
Yeah. That's a great movie. Mm-hmm. That's an underrated Lynch movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people have seen that one.
No.
I know it didn't do very well at the box office, but.
That it did not.
No. Well, at least we got a full, you know, we got a full like 8-hour movie.
Yeah.
Out of Twin Peaks. No, longer than that. Just 12-hour movie. But I just would like to personally thank David Lynch for episode 8 of Twin Peaks. I've mentioned this before. I couldn't believe I watched it immediately after it ended. Like I just went back, I rewound it, and I watched the whole thing over again. And I just remember just being just like not believing what I was watching. When it was over, I was like, I cannot believe that actually aired on TV. the Twin Peaks, episode 8. I'll never forget it, man. I mean, it's just, it had a very similar, you know, the Barry episode, Ronnie Lilly from earlier this season, that had a very similar effect on me. Like, when it was over, I was like, I don't even.
I just turn it back on again.
I watched it again. So good. I understand that last night's episode of Barry, which is the finale,
mm-hmm.
Not the series finale, season finale, because it's been renewed,
mm-hmm.
Is supposed to be fantastic.
Very excited to watch
it. And Hader directed it. So, very exciting. All right, let's take a break here. And then when we come back, we've got some... Chicago-centric old slang words that don't make us look very good. And then we have Chicago words that are contributions to the English language that can be traced back to this city. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So I'm just looking up at the morning news, WGN Morning News, which I always have on here. It says, study, this is the story that they're doing right now, study, some Game of Thrones fans are likely to skip work today.
Get a grip. I'm going to say that right now. As someone who has watched the show from day one, get a grip, go to work. It's a television show. My God.
I love that. I'm going to skip work because of Game of Thrones. Oh, man.
You're an adult.
Okay. By the way, I'm still freaked out that the ambassador from the Iron Chef America is in John Wick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's in John Wick 3?
Yeah, he's like the main villain in John Wick. He's an amazing martial artist. I had no idea. He was the dude from Iron Chef America. You know, he unveils the ingredient and everything at the beginning. That's him. He's in John Wick 3.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like, what?
Getting into a great action franchise.
Unbelievable.
What a jump.
Crazy. All right. We got a break here. We got some weather, and then we come back. We are going to talk about some Chicago-centric old slang words and words in general. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200.
Get up there. Get up there.
Yeah, man. All right. Chairman of the board right there. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. That's coming up. So there you go. Now, the reason why the old My Kind of Town Chicago was playing is because I've got the Chicago-centric old slang words that don't make us look very good This is from blockclubchicago.com or .org. It turns out that getting Chicago'd isn't a positive thing. If you're a Cubs or Sox fan who's already been hurt too much, look away. To be Chicago'd is a baseball term that means to go scoreless in a game. I'd never heard that before.
That's news to me.
I've never heard that. I think they're making that up. To get Chicago'd means you go scoreless in a game?
I will say, if you go online, if you find this article online, they do cite it. They've got some citations, so I've got to give it to them.
Wow, I've never heard that before. The term was included, by the way, Chicago, when you baseball team means to go scoreless in a game, as in to lose badly. The term was included on an NPR list of American slang terms that were a hit in the 1800s, but have since fallen out of favor. If you want a more positive spin on things, you can also Chicago another term, which means you're making them lose. Jeez.
One or the other.
Whether the term is good or bad just depends on how you want to look at things. Did the team did we get the term because our baseball teams are good or because they're bad? And we researched some Chicago-centric slang looking for the good and the bad and came up with these entries. Chicago way. Well, that's from the Untouchables.
Yes, sir.
To escalate things as a way to win. This is taken from the Untouchables when Jim Malone advises, you want to know how to get Capone? They pull a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Yes. It's a great line.
Yeah. Chicago overcoat, which would be a coffin or a casket. As in, he's wearing a Chicago overcoat. Now, I've never heard Chicago overcoat. I have heard wooden overcoat. That one I've heard. And one of the first times I remember hearing that was because there was an episode it's actually my favorite episode of Sanford and Son, is when Lamont buys two coffins and he's going to sell them. But Fred won't sleep in the house with the coffins in the house. It's my favorite episode. It's my favorite episode of Sanford and Son. My favorite moment I can't remember what the character's name is, but it's Slappy White played the character. Melvin. So the coffins are sitting in the middle of the living room. And so Melvin comes in, he knocks on the door, Melvin comes in and he walks in and he goes, "Hello, Lamont. Hello, Fred." He sees the coffins, he turns around and goes, "Goodbye, Lamont. Goodbye, Fred," and walks right out. That's where I heard wooden overcoat. I did not know Chicago overcoat. It's a coffin or a casket, as in he's wearing a Chicago overcoat. This harkens back to the 20s when, as you know, if you are a history buff, literally every person in Chicago chomped on cigars, wore fedora, worked for Al Capone, and engaged in mandatory hourly gunfights. This is also the name of a 2009 gangster film with the tagline, "The glory days are back," since there is no prouder era in the city's history than in the 20s. I've never heard of this movie. Who's in it? Look it up. Chicago Overcoat.
Chicago Overcoat.
They say it's the name of a 2009 gangster film, which I've never heard. Never heard of.
Yeah, it's straight to DVD.
Who's in it? Eric Roberts?
No, Frank Vincent.
Frank Vincent?
Stacy Keach.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it played at the 45th Chicago International Film Festival.
What's the plot? What does it say? Does it say anything about the plot? Chicago Overcoat?
Lou Maranzano was once a feared hitman, but his reputation has dimmed significantly 20 years after his retirement.
That's it?
94 minutes. I mean, there's a whole rundown. Yeah, Frank Vincent, Catherine Narducci,
mm-hmm.
Stacy Keach, Armand Assante.
Armand Assante?
Yeah.
Mm.
And, they say Chicago overcoat is a Prohibition-era slang term meaning coffin or cement shoes.
Ah.
It could be one or the other.
Okay. Well, there you go. Chicago overcoat.
Should open a code store called that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people would get confused, though. Chicago Typewriter. That's a Thompson submachine gun with a that were popular during the Prohibition, in case you were wondering if Chicago had a poor reputation in the 20s. Chicago Typewriter. How about a Chicago Piano? A Chicago Piano, also a Thompson submachine gun. How about this? The Chicago Organ Grinder, also a Thompson submachine gun. How many different terms are there for a submachine gun?
Well, every time the cops got on, they'd have to come up with a new one.
Yeah. Chicago Style, a type of jazz that is similar to the New Orleans style of jazz, but which has a greater emphasis on individual solos, a less relaxed feeling, and a somewhat smaller reliance on elements of the 19th century black ethnic music, according to Britannia. And alternately, Chicago Style means a Thompson submachine gun. How many terms are there for it? Chicago Pill. The Chicago Pill is a bullet. Presumably for your Chicago Typewriters, Oven Grinders, Pianos, and Styles. Chicago Pill.
The next installment in the Chicago television series.
Yeah, Chicago Pill. Yeah, get on that, Dick Wolf. Get on that right now. Chicago Bankroll. A single large bill like a 20 wrapped around smaller bills so that you can pretend like you're carrying around a bank. Northsiders' grandfathers do this, but in reverse, they can pretend that they're fooling would-be muggers.
My nephews used to do that. They would put take a big bill, put it on the outside,
yeah.
Fill the rest of it with wadded up paper so it looked like a big, big cash wad.
Yeah.
But it was like maybe 20 bucks.
Chicago contract, an oral agreement where you are relying on each other to be honorable, which the rest of these definitions would seem to suggest would be foolish when you're dealing with a Chicagoan. Chicago Black and Chicago Green. Types of marijuana with black and green leaves that are grown in and around the city. I've never heard that before in my life.
Neither have I.
Chicago Rattlesnake, salted pork. That's what that is.
Just salted pork?
Just salted pork. That's all it is, the Chicago Rattlesnake. Salted pork. How about this one? Chicago Heavy Mess, boiled salted pork. Please note it's set apart from Chicago Rattlesnake when it's boiled. It's an important distinction. So it's a Chicago Heavy Mess, boiled salted pork. So, all right. We got some old, and we also have some Chicago words that were, that this city contributed to the English language. We got some of those too. And if you want to jump in with any of this, it's 312-981-7200. Do you have any favorite Chicago terms or Chicago words? Words that we probably only use in this city? What about that? Language in Chicago, 312-981-7200. We got a lot of phrases that we use here in Chicago, just us. Very Chicago-centric words and phrases. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right, we got a break for the news, and we'll come back.
You right down at all your feet.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on a Monday morning. It means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. Every Monday morning, my dad calls in and tells a joke to cheer everybody up and to make you laugh on this Monday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about Chicago words and phrases and things like that. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. The moment of creation for a word often remains elusive. Typically, at least before the internet age, a word gains popularity in local speech and then gets written down somewhere. Then they can trace the lineage. Still, Chicago, city on the make, has had a hand in the genesis of many well-known words and phrases. These are Chicago's top 40 contributions to the English language, ranked by importance to the degree of Chicago influence and overall Chicagoness as a term. How about this one? Grabowski. Yes. A hardworking blue-collar lunch bucket type invented by Mike Ditka to describe the 1985 Bears. So that goes back right to Ditka. Grabowski. I went to high school with a kid named Grabowski.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And he was never referred to by his first name. It was always Grabowski.
It reminds me of that SNL skit with, was it Bill Brasky?
Yeah, Bill Brasky.
His kid's showering, or he showers in vodka.
Yeah.
And his kids eat shrimp scampi.
That would definitely be a Adam McKay, Will Ferrell sketch. No question about it. But they have the big teeth and they're eating the glass as they're drinking. 773 area code says, when we were kids, we used to call the CTA buses the cream and green limousine. I remember green limousine.
Was that the color of the buses?
Yeah, they were. They were cream and green. Yeah, they were.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, they're beautiful. 309 area code. Well, it's my favorite word, but I can't say it on the air.
Yeah, no, I can't say that.
Can't say it on the air. It's my favorite word, though. It is literally my favorite word in the English language. I can tell you that there was this TV show. I can give you a hint as to what it is. There was this TV show with Catherine Bell called JAG.
Yeah.
And then you take the opposite of on and add that to it, and it's my favorite word of all time. Here's the thing. That's not a Chicago phrase.
Really? Where's that from?
Pittsburgh.
Huh.
And I learned that by being a smart aleck myself, because someone said that that word JAG and then the other part of it came out of Pittsburgh, and I was like, "No way, dude. That's a Chicago word." And somebody sent me the history of that word, and it is indeed. It's traced back to Pittsburgh.
Wow.
Now, I just assumed it was Chicago because I've said that word in other states and people go, what? People don't know, what have no idea what it is. And so I just assumed it was from Chicago because it's the only city I've ever heard it in. And it's in like every play that David Mamet has ever written. So I just assumed it was a Chicago word, but it's not. It literally is traced back to Pittsburgh. But we've taken good control of it. That's a word that a lot of people in Chicago say.
Mm-hmm.
All right, how about this? Freak, specifically in the sense of a person who is contemptible because of unusual behavior or appearance. The word freak, first used in print by the Chicago newspaper man Finley Peter Dunn in his column Mr. Dooley's Chicago in 1895. So the word freak, that can be traced back to here. How about this phrase, yuck it up? Yuck it up. First print appearance in Saul Bellow's Herzog in 1964. Yeah, yuck it up.
Yuck it up, fuzzball.
Is that what it says, or is he laugh it up? Doesn't he say laugh it up?
Oh, yeah, no, it is laugh it up. I like yuck it up.
Yeah, laugh it up, fuzzball. I can't believe I knew that. I can't believe I knew that more than you did. That it was actually
Oh, there you go. Shows how much I know.
Is that in Empire or is that in Star Wars? It's in Star Wars, right?
Empire.
It's Empire?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't remember. I don't know.
Yeah.
Dag Nabbit comes from Chicago. You would think that would be like from the South or something. Oh, Dag Nabbit. Like an old prospector. Dag Nabbit.
What was Will Ferrell the prospector?
Well, that was a cut for time sketch, by the way. I can't remember his name.
Chiggins.
Yeah, that's it. Cut for time.
Colonel Chiggins.
Yeah. Some of those sketches that got cut for time are really great.
Oh, they're amazing.
They're hilarious. That one, well, everybody breaks in that one because everybody just loses it because Will Ferrell's ridiculous in it.
Yeah.
So Dag Nabbit. First print usage was in the Tribune, August 21st, 1933. The first time Dag Nabbit appeared in the Chicago Tribune in 1933.
I wonder what context.
I don't know.
I'll always wonder.
I would imagine that somebody was writing about a prospector. That would be my. How about Mud Pack? A beauty treatment involving the application of mud to the face. It first appeared in print as Mud Dash Pack in Ben Hecht's 1001 Afternoons in Chicago. It's a great play. A great play. Man, there was a fantastic production of that show about 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago, with a terrific actress, friend of mine, too. Natasha Lowe is her name. She's beautiful, and she was so good in that show, Natasha Lowe. Pipe Dream, another one that came from Chicago. An apparent reference to the vision of opium smokers. All right, well, there you go. Pipe Dream first appeared in print with a hyphen in the Tribune in 1890, describing the impossibility of aerial navigation.
Shows how much they know.
Yeah. Pipe Dream. How about Dop Kit? D-O-P-P kit. That's a shaving kit. Still patented, the term is shortened from Charles Doppelt and Company, a leather goods manufacturer formerly based on Cermak Road in Wabash. I've never heard Dop Kit in my life. So, how about Home In On? To move toward the goal, Home In On It. First printed in the Tribune, December 7th, 1944. Boy, the Tribune really...
coining a lot of phrases.
Coining a lot of, yeah. A lot of words and phrases. Simonize. To polish, especially with wax, from the brand name Simonize, a car polish developed by George Simon in 1910 for Simon's Manufacturing Company, which was located at 2121 South Michigan Avenue.
All right.
How about police? P-U-H-L-E-E-Z-E. Oh, police. That goes back to Chicago? Chicago's responsible for police. Extension of the word please to indicate pleading or sarcasm. First print appearance was in the Tribune, shockingly, in 1927. And it was spelled Pulleas, which is P-U-H-L-L-E-A-S-E. In a column, A-Linotype or 2, from a reader named Kathleen begging to have her letter printed. She said, Pulleas, R-H-L, R-H-L, print my contribution just once. So now we have police. Bum rap. Wow, that's pretty cool that's narrowed to, that goes back to Chicago. Bum rap, in its original sense of a false criminal charge, the term bum rap first appeared in print on June 5th, 1913, in shockingly, the Tribune.
Nothing for the Sun-Times.
I'm telling you. It's an extended sense of undeserved criticism or blame. It first appeared on print September 30th, 1921, also in the Tribune.
Nothing for the Daily News.
Nothing.
No, just the Tribune. Churning them out.
That's right. All right. All right, we got more Chicago. You guys want to jump in here with Chicago words or phrases that are pretty much unique to Chicago? And I've got more history here about where some of these words come from. Or what words actually can be traced back to Chicago, and specifically the Tribune, evidently. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and we've got my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. But first, let's do the weather, and then we'll break and come back and hear a joke.
Ooh, it's the best part of the week, baby. It's time to hear something funny. Here we go with your music intro. Ah!
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Hey, what'd I say?
It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. Nick's dad tells a joke.
Ah, yes! Here we go!
Yeah. There it is. All right, every Monday morning my dad calls in and tells a joke, and that's coming up. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, every Monday morning my dad wants to brighten up your work week start with a joke. My dad's been telling jokes forever. And, yeah, so let's get my dad in here. Hey, Dad.
I'm Nick.
How are you, buddy?
Doing great.
Good. How's Ma?
Very good.
Good, good, good. Okay, you got a joke.
Yeah, the joke. Guy says, my brother is a very inconsiderate husband. He won a trip for two to Paris. He went twice.
All right. All right.
We went twice. All right. Thanks, Dad. See ya.
Hi, Nick.
There you go, buddy.
That was Jokey, Jokey, Jokey time. It was a Jokey, Jokey, Jokey time. Nick's dad told a joke.
That's right. He'll do it again next week. He went twice.
Very inconsiderate.
Yeah. Very, very, very inconsiderate. All right. How about this word that we are finding the origins from some words that lead right back to this city? How about jinx? Originally referring to curses in baseball, jinx first appeared in print in the Chicago Daily News. Oh, there's a different newspaper.
Finally, there we go.
In 1911, the word probably comes up as either inks, which is the Latin name for the ringneck bird, which was considered magical, and the title character of the 19th century American popular song Captain Jinx and the Horse Marines. That was a popular song, Captain Jinx and the Horse Marines?
What's a horse marine?
I don't know.
It's like a military-trained horse?
Yeah, I guess so. All right.
Okay.
How about Pullman? That's a train sleeping car named after the Chicago Railroad Baron George Pullman. We knew that one. Hoochie Coochie, which is a seductive dance, although it's associated with the dance with the dancer Little Egypt at the World's Columbian Exposition in 1893. The first appearance of the term in print was in an 1898 column by Finley Peter Dunn. How about razzmatazz? The Chicago writer Charles Ade first used this word in 1899 in an undoubled Z version as a personification of the flu. Mr. Grip Razzmatazz. The next year, he used it again, and was probably the first instance of its current meaning, which is showy, stylish, or dazzling.
So it was originally used to describe the flu?
Yeah.
Huh.
How about pooch? We've all said pooch about a little dog. The origin of, although the origin of pooch is uncertain, it first appeared in the Tribune in 1906 as Pooch, the name of a missing dog belonging to the White Sox first baseman Jiggs Donahue. What? White Sox first baseman. Wow. Jungle Jim. Originally a Chicago-based company and its brand name spelled Jungle Jim, one word. The Jungle Jim's patent application was filed in 1921 and printed references to the two-word lowercase Jungle Jim had already appeared by 1929. Cloud Nine. Now, that means a state of bliss. Aside from the name of a boat, the first known print citation referred to a radio show called Cloud Nine, produced in 1950 by WBBM and sponsored by Wrigley. The variants, Cloud 7 and Cloud 8, coexisted in the early days of the phrase, 8 being the first recorded usage in 1935.
What did Cloud 7 and Cloud 8 mean?
I don't know.
Not as good as Cloud 9.
Not quite. How about flea flicker, a play in football in which the ball changes hands before a forward pass? The New York Times on-language columnist Barry Zimmer located Tribune citations dating back to 1911 that credit the play's invention by Bob Zupke, then football coach at Oak Park High School. Ferris wheel. We've only got that big giant one down the street.
Down on over there.
Point for the people who can see me on the radio, I'm pointing east.
Just in case.
You get a really nice view of it in Studio A, though.
Yeah, beautiful view.
Beautiful view. That's it. You know, I like this studio more, but that studio's got a better view because it's right out on the lake. It's beautiful. Get to see the sun come up. So, how about kielbasa? A direct borrowing from the Polish word for any kind of sausage, kielbasa, as referring specifically to the garlicky, peppery Polish sausage of Maxwell Street fame, which was first used in an English context by Saul Bellow in The Adventures of Augie March in 1953. Well, how about this one? Southpaw. That's me. a left-handed person, especially a pitcher in baseball, popularized by Finley Peter Dunn. Chicago sports writers at the turn of the century also provided the first recorded uses of hit and run, pinch hitting, home plate, and slugger. So lots of baseball phrases originating in Chicago. All right, how about smoke-filled room? That's another phrase that originated in Chicago, the place where the decision is made in secret, perhaps corruptly. At the Republican presidential nominating convention in 1920, party leaders chose Warren G. Harding as their candidate in a room at the Blackstone Hotel that the Associated Press described as the now famous phrase smoke-filled room. Egghead. That came from here. A derogatory term for an intellectual, a 1918 letter from Carl Sandburg, indicates that the Chicago newspaper man used egghead to refer to a highbrow editorial writer out of touch with the common man. In the 1950s, it was used. Oh, this is a nice one. Two thumbs up. Oh. The Chicago film reviewers Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert trademarked this phrase for movie criticism oppositely, spectators are given the thumbs up to indicate that the combatant should be killed in gladiator times. let's see. Skyscraper originated here. The skyscrapers of Chicago outrival anything of their kind in the world, quote-unquote, said in the Chicago Inter-Ocean newspaper in 1888, the first usage of skyscraper to refer to buildings at a time when tall Chicago edifices could reach the 130-foot Montauk. And then the number one word that is associated with Chicago that has the most importance is jazz. The American Dialect Society's Word of the 20th Century. The first instance of jazz in print referring to America's native music appeared in the Tribune on July 11th, 1915. The most recent research says that jazz meant energy or pep before that. And it probably traveled from California minor league baseball to a banjo player named Bert Kelly, who started up a band in 1914 in Chicago, and then the word caught on. Everything is connected to baseball, too, if we've noticed. All right. All righty, then. Well, there you go. Jazz, biggest word to ever come out of Chicago. All right. Hey, listen, tomorrow, 2 for Tuesday, make sure you stay tuned for that. And then Lindsey Cochran and Scott Tipping are going to be with us to talk about Great Moments in Vinyl. They're doing Zeppelin. So we're going to talk to the Great Moments in Vinyl guys tomorrow.